It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. This is going to be a wild one. We've got Odokta here, Owen J.J. Stone. We also have Baratunde Thurston, his return. He has been here in about a year. And to moderate the entire thing, we've brought in a psychotherapist, Georgia Dow from iMore.com. Of course, we're going to talk about fake news, what to do to save Twitter, why people are taking so many selfies, and why highway fatalities are up. Are they related? It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 589, recorded Sunday, November 20th, 2016. Save it for St. Patrick's Day. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Twit. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, and just in time for the holidays, get $5 off the limited edition holiday set at Harry's.com. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT5. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com. And at checkout, select overnight shipping and enter the code TWIT. Time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And we have a great one for you today. I am thrilled to get some of my favorite people on the show, starting with somebody who hasn't been on in ages. Baratunde Thurston is here. And all this time, I didn't know you had a gag order.
It's good to be back, Leo. Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
You've been busy.
Esteemed guest. And yeah, I was working for about 9.5 months to help relaunch the new Daily Show with Trevor Noah from last August to May. And I just didn't, in part, have time. That job is insanely demanding and also required some approvals to do things that had normally come naturally. So it was a more of a pain logistically and bureaucratically to be here.
Yeah,
so
I understand.
Good to be in my voice.
I'm glad. Thanks for having me. I was taking it personally, so I'm really glad that...
It was also that.
Oh, okay.
It was definitely personal. I took the job so that I wouldn't have to come into it. People's emails, Leo Laporte, who doesn't read emails. It's just very challenging.
I don't read emails, so that's good. Yeah. I didn't see all that stuff.
But sometimes your team sends them.
Reads and sends emails. I know. I've been trying
to
convince them otherwise.
That's the best way to deal with email. Have other people do it for you.
It's really true.
You're creating jobs. It's beautiful.
Baratunde's book, How to Be Black from Harper. And he's also the creator of and one of the hosts on... Panoply's About Race podcast, showaboutrace.com.
Correct.
You just recently started that up.
That's been going for about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Almost. We took a bit of a hiatus because one of our hosts was writing multiple books. I was doing the Daily Show thing. But funny thing, we got a lot to talk about nowadays. So that show is going weekly. And there's a whole crew of regulars beyond just the three founders, Raquel, Tanner, and myself.
Awesome.
So it's getting even more interesting, sadly, but also excitingly.
So thrilled to have you also with us, Georgia Dow, who is an old friend from iMore.com and a regular on, I'm sure, many of their podcasts. But we're glad to have you on ours whenever we can. Georgia is a psychotherapist besides being a tech writer, and we may need you today.
Oh, that's why I'm here.
Already, I've been going through the 5 stages of grief with you just to make sure I'm on track.
How are you doing?
You know, I had added 2 more. I think I got stuck. But I'm going to go back to bargaining and continue on from there, okay? If that's all right with you, can we make a deal?
We can make a deal.
Also here, Owen J.J. Stone. We call him O-Doctor from IQMZ.com. Good to see you, my friend.
The Eagles are losing. You're lucky that I love you, that I come here on these Sundays on my holy days in the winter and spend time with you. I can't even look at the TV. I got to pay attention to the show and talk about technology. That's the kind of grief I'm living in. That's what I need five stages of help from.
Oh, that's nothing. I'm a Niners fan. That's nothing. Oh. That's nothing. I don't even have to check to see if the Niners are losing.
You sure don't. No. You stop just, it. You just don't get laugh. Something happy the next day when they win. People get excited for you.
Hey, they're catching up. Okay.
And there we go.
Actually, I'm not supposed to say anything because apparently somebody in their chat room has decided to tape the game and watch the show instead. So I won't. No spoilers.
No here. Sports. Wow. We're off.
I will
We're
tell off. You what Westworld's all about, but nothing about the Niners.
Ooh, love Westworld.
Do you?
I haven't watched it yet.
It's my new distraction.
Must happen.
Before you watch it, Baratunde, I would, in fact, I wish I had, I would read some of the fan theories about it. Because
before watching before read you fan watch it?
No, I have watched it. He's seen it.
Oh, wait, you've seen it? You haven't watched it. I confuse you two.
See how quick that happens?
We went through a whole practice round before we went live.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I'm going to binge watch it.
You're to the way left. No,
I'm
actually,
on the far left.
I'm gonna cop to something because after you listened to last week's show, Baratunde, they said you were very upset, and and direct messaged me, which and I was grateful because you didn't do it. You didn't publicly, you know, you didn't tweet me in public. You DM'd me, and I think we talked it through, right?
But we definitely did, and I think look, I'm trying to practice good. Citizenry in all forms, and that includes like if I disagree with someone, not going straight to the public, but actually like talking directly to the person. It's something that gentrifiers don't do. They call the cops instead of just talking to their neighbors about turning the music down.
Right.
So I didn't want to do that to you.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the back and forth that we had. And honestly, I feel a lot better. Look, the election's very hot topic. I specifically had messaged Leo for those who are like, why were you mad? Because I just thought he was cutting people off a bit much when they thought that Facebook and all had some responsibility. And as the show went on, that conversation did open up. Obviously, that topic has opened up even more this week. And I've done a lot more boxing and yoga and housework. So I've burned off a lot of my aggression.
You know what I was doing? I was the guy at Thanksgiving dinner who said, can we not talk about politics, please? And I lost that battle. And I understand. I mean, it really is part of the nation's dialogue right now. How about Canada, Georgia? Is it different up north? Or do you look down at us below the 49th parallel?
No. First of all, do you look down on us? Like, right? Do you
Well, already I'm being Eurocentric. I know Canada is not above us; it's kind of over there. But do you?
Wait,
I mean,
what
are they? Well, no, because on the map, you know, on the map, it looks like you know Canada, the United States, Mexico. But that's just a map. It's not like they're really above us; they're north of us. You know what I'm saying? In fact. My kid's school has an upside down map just to kind of break through the Eurocentric.
What kind of school are you sending your children to?
What? Look, this is why.
This is Northern California, damn it.
Open minded. I'm far to the left, and that's crazy.
Didn't Apple do something this week? Let's get started.
All right. That was what I was trying to do. Probably it was foolish in hindsight. It was foolish to try to curtail the conversation. So let's talk about tech. And one of the things that really is true, well, we do focus on tech, and we've had a lot of conversation behind the scenes, all the hosts, about how much we want to talk about politics. And we decided that really our charter is to talk about tech. And to the degree that politics interferes with tech or involves tech, we certainly will talk about it. And there's quite a bit to talk about there, including fake news on Facebook and so forth. But
the FCC moving
FCC,
forward, there's a lot of stuff.
There's a lot there. What I don't want to do is have our audience, which comes to us, I think, somewhat for a respite from the what was incessant political talk. To just say, well, there's nowhere I can turn now because that's all anybody's talking about.
Right. Right.
But I completely understood what you were saying, and I didn't disagree with you. I'm trying to mediate my own progressive tongue as much as anything.
No, I think we're good. And I think, look, if there's a tech angle to even what we're talking about now, for me, it's that we have the ability to message each other and actually have conversation, we often choose to heighten discord and tension for the sake of performing our disagreements,
right,
rather than honestly seeking to deal with them.
Well, and Twitter facilitates that in ways that is highly, in my opinion, destructive.
Many networks encourage it. Yeah, they if your message is not public, it can't be monetized.
I have had horrible Twitter fights with people, lost friends on Twitter because of intemperate things I've said and probably would never have said in public. In person, but Twitter just kind of lends itself.
I know you don't like Twitter, Owen. Because you just be Twitter bashing. Like, Twitter's like the kid you just don't like, and you be telling everybody all the time how that kid's always messing up. My last podcast was called Facebook Politicking. Basic story. I sit in the middle. I see both sides. I say, well, they mean this and they mean that, and I try to have a conversation. I had somebody come into my comment and say, you don't support Owen if you voted for Trump. You're just a racist, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is a white woman that I had happened to sleep with. And I'm saying, why are you yelling at this person and calling them a racist and telling they hate me? You don't know my relationship with this person. But people go insane in their mind when they pick their sides and they play their games.
But Twitter.
Like Bertrand, they said talking to each other.
Twitter.
Yeah, these are people you know.
Twitter facilitates this. But it facilitates
Don't pay attention to it.
Facebook well, I don't. Does it too. I think you shouldn't pay attention to it.
The internet does it, Leo. The internet. But it's the internet.
I feel like I contributed to some derailing Leo, because I'm going to try to help maintain the thread and undo some of the damage I may have done by taking this off. You were asking Georgia how things were going up north. Up north.
Down north.
Us, but up north. Side north in Canada.
Yeah. The map says. I said Apple. Usually when I say Apple, he's like, Apple?
Oh, I got a lot to say about Apple, buddy. I am pissed off about Apple. Let me tell you something.
Tell me.
We're going to get to that in a second. But Georgia?
We're in shock. Canadians are in shock. They're in shock.
Is there a sense? Well, I mean, everybody's in shock. But is there a sense that it could be bad news for Canada? Or are you just worried about a whole bunch of people moving there?
There's a lot of people planning on moving here. It isn't as easy to immigrate to Canada as people think. But no, I think that people are genuinely worried what's going to happen with our trade agreements. The U.S. is our biggest trade partner. So a lot of things could be changed because of that. And also just to see the strife that's happening to our neighbors is hard for us because, you know, this is something that we can't actually apologize for.
Perfect. I'm so glad we brought it back to Canada. That was the best.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's deflect it to England for a moment, because they have now passed the Snoopers Charter. Theresa May, who is the current prime minister after Brexit in Great Britain, had proposed this years ago and has pushed it several times, never been able to get it through Parliament. Now both houses of Parliament, the Commons, and the Lords have approved it. It awaits the sovereign's approval, believe it or not. And once the Queen says,
the Queen?
Yes.
Wow.
Once the Queen says okay, which apparently is pro forma, I don't think she will weigh in on this. The actual name of it is the Investigatory Powers Act. It is according to, well, I'll read what Cory Doctorow says in Boing Boing. And by the way, Corey lived in London for many years and is very well aware of the issues there. The most extreme surveillance law in Europe, more extreme than the Patriot Act. And Snowden, in fact, tweeted yesterday. He says it goes farther than many autocracies. New spying powers to the government. The government now will require all ISPs to save everything you do online, to make it available to the government on demand. It also undermines cryptography. This picture of Theresa May shaking Putin's hand is a little bit inflammatory, because I don't know if they're really related to the story. But it is the law that we have in the United States been very afraid of. There have been rumblings that this would happen in the United States as well. Extreme surveillance. And
how did they justify it?
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, I guess the overall justification for this and the Patriot Act was fear of terrorism. And it's felt that, you know, law enforcement needs these tools to fight terrorism. And I presume that that's the argument made in the UK, although I don't see much of that. Snowden tweeted, the UK just legalized the most extreme surveillance in the history of Western democracy. It goes further than many autocracy. It includes bulk data collection by the GCHQ. And by the way, GCHQ works with the NSA. So this is something, you know, that probably the NSA would like to pass as well. Then apparently President-elect Trump's nominee for the CIA head is kind of an interesting. Again, we seem to have to read a lot of tea leaves when it comes to what Donald Trump wants to do. But Mike Pompeo, who is a member of Congress, he's on the Intelligence Committee, has both said he wants to increase mass surveillance. He has said he thinks using encryption is a red flag. And I use encryption whenever I can. But he also says he doesn't believe in back doors in encryption.
Okay, that's good.
So it's an interesting mix, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've been here before.
Yeah.
And it's, we should all be taking care to erase things that we don't think shouldn't just exist in the hands of these companies who already have shown that they can't hold on to it with or without government orders, like Yahoo, Target, name a company, they've lost your data. So we don't exactly need the government to come along and ask for it. They will probably be leaking it out a side door as we speak. And then using encryption tools, just good, healthy internet practice, like something I'm trying to be better about myself. But it's, yeah, this seems like an obviously not good thing, like an obviously bad thing. Anybody want to argue in favor of a digital police state?
If you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about.
And you're saying that facetiously. I know, Owen. I don't think.
No, I'm not. As a non-criminal entity, a person who's not somewhere in a basement in an underclosed location, I have nothing to fear but fear itself.
I love your background. I mean, you're just in a black room.
He's in the dark. That's just so that people can't find out where he's located.
Well, we should. And by the way, he'll never say that on the air, but we should point out that Owen has rarely been arrested when he's pulled over for driving while black. So that's good, too, right?
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Definitely. It works out my favor.
How many times this year? What is the current count?
24.
I'm just going to let that, sink in a little bit.
63 times in the last 63 times in the last 3 years, and I've only gotten 16 tickets. So most of the time they pull me over, they realize that I'm a black guy named Owen, and they say, hey, and then they let me go.
Really? Because it's the Owen? It's getting you off the hook?
Oh, a cop pulled me over one time when I was in my hybrid. And he's like, Owen? And I'm like, yeah, hybrid, huh? I'm like, yep. Not thugging and bugging in a Lexus with rims. Sorry.
No, see, they're pulling you over because you are a curiosity. They're like, wait, that is a black man in a hybrid?
Whatever could his name be?
Owen? Oh, my God. They probably have a back channel where they just swap your picture amongst themselves. Like, I got him, too.
You got to pull this guy over. He's a hoot.
I drove by a cop. I got a really loud radio. My radio is like 3,000 watts. I'd be bumping. I rode by a cop bumping Taylor Swift, and he pulled me over. I'm like, it's Taylor Swift. What's going on? It ain't Biggie.
I don't know if that counts as racism, Owen. I think that's just novelty. I think something. They're confused.
I'm like a unicorn. They want to shake my hand.
But the excuse is used, and it's clearly racial profiling, but the excuse is used that the same excuse that's the Snoopers Charter and the Patriot Act, that as long as you're doing nothing wrong, we're doing everything we can to protect our neighborhoods, to protect against terrorism. And as long as you're doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to fear. This is, stop and frisk. This is just...
And I think, look, to take the metaphor further, it's not like, Owen, you are a unicorn, not because you love Taylor Swift, drive a hybrid, and are named Owen, but because you've survived all these encounters. You're way beyond the data plot for any reasonable cluster. Like, you're an outlier.
Well, and Owen's a big scary guy, too. Owen is not.
And because of how many times you've lived. Like, you've lived 63 times. Yeah, and Jesus.
That's a terrible way to think of it. Oh, my God.
But that's the scary thing. And, like, when you take all this abuse of power, right? most cops don't abuse power. It just takes a few to really skew the system. Let's say it's 5%. That's still way too many. Now, but because they have guns and badges which shield them from accountability for use of those guns, they're encouraged, the bad ones, to keep doing bad things. So now you give the government all this surveillance, snooping, history, you know, browsing, and hacking power, and 5-10% to, you know, what is the digital version of pulling over Owen? Who are the communities that are going to be subject to abuse by this power? It's probably not Leo Laporte in general. It's probably our Muslim brothers and sisters, like depending on the society we're talking about, different groups are going to be targeted by this. So that burden of non-accountability is going to be borne by some people who really are already going through some tough times as it is. It's just the risk of abuse, which has been proven to happen, is one of the main reasons why you don't concentrate this much power in such narrow hands. It's so obvious.
You know how many times I have been pulled over for jamming 50 cents as loud as I can in my Tesla? You know how many times this year? Actually, in the last 3 years?
Zero, because there is no artist named 50 Cent. That's
why. He's only one person. He's not multiple.
50 Cent.
50 Cent.
The thing I'm waiting for is for a government to have this power and for them to get hacked and for millions of regular citizens to have their non-criminal information put out there. Just some old perverted funky stuff they got going on. They sleep with socks. I don't know what kind of weird stuff people are doing, but that might get hacked and leaked out to the world. And then what are they going to say? You've been housing all this stupid information for waiting for somebody else to come in there and get a hold of it.
Here's a question. If one of the proposals is to create a registry of Muslims in the United States, I imagine
Amazon probably has that.
Well, right. First of all, you don't need Facebook to create a registry. You could probably figure it out. In fact, we had heard, and I don't know if it was ever proven, but that among other things that the Patriot Act did, of course, you can, with a national security letter and other means, query grocery stores, and they can't say anything about it. And you could say, well, who's eating hummus? You know, I mean, you could literally do that. And we've heard
Every upwardly mobile.
That's the problem. It doesn't work in Marin. It might work in Philly. I don't know.
Data.
Yeah. but I wonder if something like that happened, what kind of civil disobedience would happen?
I think we all register.
We'd all register, wouldn't we?
We all register.
But even though that could be risky, this is the thing that really will be the test. Would people like me step forward and register, even though that might be a risky thing to do?
I've been talking so much. Let me let somebody else weigh in. Sorry.
People, we become complacent way too easily. If it's not about us, if it doesn't directly affect us, rarely do people do something because that puts them in an eye and that makes them feel like they're going to be targeted. And so, unfortunately, it takes things to become really bad before people decide, now I have to get up and fight because this is for all of us, right? Like, if this can be done to one person, then it could eventually be done to you as well. But people only get upset when it's something that affects themselves or a loved one. And we're becoming more and more boxed in, like as we become more attached to like the internet and social media and other things that kind of keep us away from general people at large. We become able to survive without having to actually deal with things. Like, we don't have to open up a browser that's dealing with a difficult subject that we don't really want to deal with. So it's much easier for us to turn a blind eye and feel like everything's going to be okay. And when things get really bad, but it has to be, it's becoming unfortunately worse and worse before people will actually take up a stand and say, this is something that I need to fight for. And that's a really dangerous area of social psychology, because we end up with that groupthink of like us and them. And that's really, really dangerous, because in the end, it's all us.
Go ahead.
In general, I'd say, Georgia, you are 1,000% right. But since you live in the glory land of this Canada, you have not been here in America for the last 24 months when it's been protest central. You don't like somebody wearing a blue shirt? We protesting that. You don't like the president to want a fair election, even though it's not the popular vote? We protest that.
Well, isn't there a risk?
Streets now.
Isn't there a risk of crying wolf? Too much protesting? Then when there's something really serious to protest, everybody goes, oh, you know, there they go again.
I'm not trying to drive down that street right now, Leo. I'm just saying that people are actually getting up out of their mom's basement, which I'm not currently in, and getting out to these streets
in somebody's basement
right now and care to put get on the street. People, more and more people are doing it. And yes, the cry wolf thing comes into effect, but at least people are doing it. Instead of a hashtag, are hitting the streets. I would like that they hit the streets with more of a purpose and direction, but at least they're hitting the streets.
So when we talk about privacy, there's really a couple of issues. It's not merely government snooping. And you know, I think at least so far that might have been an overblown concern. There's also the issue of commercial snooping. Uber, for instance, has just changed its terms of service for people who use the Uber car service. Uber may, in Uber's sole discretion, permit you from time to time to submit, upload, publish, or otherwise make available to Uber textual, audio, and visual content, commentary, and feedback. By providing user content to Uber, you grant Uber a worldwide, perpetual, irrevocable, transferable, royalty-free license. We've all seen this. To sub-license, use, copy. In other words, Uber is saying anything we get from you, we can use without further notice or consent from you, without the requirement of payment to you. Some are seeing this as a grab. Remember, when you get an Uber, they're gathering all sorts of information about you, where you've been, where you're going, who you are, if you've got Spotify, what you're listening to, because they tie into your Spotify account. And now apparently this is all becoming grist for the mill. If I have an Amazon Echo, and I do everywhere in my house, the Echo, you know, as an example, could be listening to what TV shows I'm watching, make record of that, and sell it to the networks as ratings information. It would actually be the best ratings tool the networks ever had. So that's another kind of snooping that is an issue. And then there's a third issue with this, which is a security issue, because if the government can snoop on you, you know, have backdoors in your encryption or whatever, if commercial entities can snoop on you, hackers can also use these avenues to not only snoop on you, but to mess with you. So all three of these are issues. The government is the only one of these three that owns guns, of course, and nuclear weapons. But they're all to be concerned about, yes?
Absolutely. And I think we also, when we went digital, we stopped physically owning a lot of the production of our lives. Like if you took a picture before in the analog world, you developed that. You could develop it yourself. Or you could go to 1 hour photo and hope they didn't make copies. But that was yours to lose in a fire, to sell, to misplace in an attic and discover 50 years later and be really excited by it. But now so much of that we produce about ourselves, our location, our thoughts, our memos, our notes to self, are physically owned by someone else. And there's a land grab that's been made. Like, you're not just a phone company customer, you're like a rich source of data and insights that's monetizable that you didn't really sign up for, not actively, right? It's this sort of retroactive, oh, by the way, we own your family and your children, right, in perpetuity, in all forms of media, right, in all modes of time and space and the intersection thereof.
Right.
And we have been late as citizens, much less consumers, but as citizens, to claim ourselves. And this is something, you know, you mentioned the FCC earlier, oh, doctor, like Tom Wheeler released a recent policy, which is like, with respect to the telcos, that data is ours and you have to like check with us before you do all kinds of things. So what Uber is doing is sadly common because everybody's got the same lawyers and they're all working with the same, generally behind the times, overwhelmed and perhaps totally unaware user base that doesn't know what to do about this, even if made aware of it. Like, what are we supposed to do? And saying don't use stuff is just like saying, just say no. Like, these services have been made so integral and so addictive in our lives that saying not to use them is pretty meaningless for a significant portion of the population whose employers demand it, whose friend networks demand it, whose sense of self is so, you know, tied into it, it's like a perfect drug.
So how do we fight it? Awesome. What do we do?
Well, first of all, we get that Facebook notice that we pass around that says, I hereby declare my Facebook contract says, by posting this, I am not a Facebook.
Yes, come on, right?
Multiple languages. That's what most people understand.
Talk about fake news.
Listen to my joke, to how it rolls in that, for you cut me off and let me finish.
Go ahead.
That's the general way to do this, because the layman people that are not in you or your bubble or even my bubble, don't understand these things. But once the crowd gets to hear about, you just say, Uber's going to steal all your stuff. Uber's going to steal my stuff. Hey, man, you hear Uber's going to steal my stuff? Uber ain't stealing my stuff. Next thing you know, everybody doesn't really know what's going on, but at least they look and they check. Because when you sign up for Uber and you scroll through that 5-page thing and click OK because you're trying to get a ride home in the rain, you don't have time to read that. These people do a very good job of not informing their customer base about what they're doing. And usually what happens is, again, somebody gets screwed over and something bad happens, and then everybody will know about it. And then they have an uproar like with Facebook and taking people's pictures and things like that. So we just need to inform people better. There needs to be some law that puts in chunk form, simple byte form, hey, we're using your stuff, and if you want to opt out, do it. If not, don't use our service, because it's all hidden away in those long form contracts that people don't know about.
Well, I fully agree with you, Owen, but you know what? The other part of this is that we are fickle beasts. We're constantly sacrificing our future for the things that we want in the present. We don't think about the repercussions for our actions, and we are way too short-sighted and nepotistic to really care. And like what, you know, Orwell really didn't think about is that we're the ones sticking our cameras everywhere, you know, installing them in our private rooms, carrying them wherever we go. And in the end, our biggest fear isn't that people are going to be watching us, but that people might not be. And so we've created this ourselves.
Nailed we've it. Actually Narcissist nation, in other words, right?
We've abdicated our own right to privacy.
Oh, my God.
Don't make me get my full hat, because watch this. Okay, Google. Okay, Alexa. Xbox on, PlayStation on. I'll be unplugging everything when I'm not using. Okay, Siri, you ain't listening to me about nothing.
Yeah, but here you are on a podcast talking. Like, we are relatively public people. I don't have Alexa. Well, I couldn't anyways because I'm in Canada. But anyways, I wouldn't have it. I don't have Siri on. Nothing really is listening to me. But I'm on Twitter, and I hope to get more Twitter followers. And I do podcasts, and people know probably a lot more about me than I really know that they know. So, like real name, problem too.
But that's me putting out the best version of myself. That's the 6'2", 185 pounds I've been working out all morning version of myself I put out. You ain't going to get to just sneak in my house on my Alexa or my Google and find out what I'm over here doing, because you wouldn't want to know. But what I put forth on my own accord is my decision.
How about this? Coca-Cola has just introduced the selfie bottle Israel. It's a bottle with a camera that shows you taking a picture of yourself drinking a Coca-Cola. I don't know if they actually
I cannot wait for the foul, disgusting things people are going to do with this bottle. This is going to get really interesting really fast. Whenever companies empower people to express themselves, it takes about 5 minutes for folks to get real nasty.
What
real
kind of adult videos you been watching? That. You just went right to it.
People are going to put it on their dogs. People are going to, you know, have all kinds of stuff with vehicles. It's going to get obviously pretty nasty too. I'm just saying, like, Coke, this is great and horrible at the same time.
Yeah, it was devised by Geffen team for the Coca-Cola Summer Love campaign. It's an outdoor brand event in Israel. The selfies are taken when you tilt the bottle to 70 degrees and can be shared on Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. Yeah.
I'd love to be on Coca-Cola's team.
Doesn't this seem like this should be a fake news story, and yet it's real?
It's real, and it's playing like this is such a. So here's another way they could have spun this, right? Coca-Cola, instead of creating this one-way data flow from the customer back to Coca-Cola's server, so that they can monetize your image to get other people to create a relationship from themselves to other Coca-Cola servers, they could have created something that connected you to other Coca-Cola drinkers. They could have encouraged some level of, like, community, find someone in your neighborhood. Like, I don't know, I'm being a little cheesy right now, but I think there's such a narrow imagination around how all these organizations and all these incentives are built, which is just like they're treating us like the natural resource that they're mining. And they'll discard us. We're not.
That's the new way of business.
Yeah, and it's so extractive and it's so lazy. Ultimately, this is pretty lazy. So I want them to, like, step up. If you're going to exploit me, like, at least make it more interesting. But a selfie camera taped to the bottom of a Coke bottle is pretty low rent.
Question, Uncle Leo.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of exploiting people and getting that money, don't we got to add reading?
You are so good. Owen J.J. Stone knows how to monetize.
Got to get that paper,
like,
dog.
Nobody's business.
Ain't nobody getting them 50 cents. You don't read them ads.
Owen, you're the real thing. No, you're the real thing. All right.
I believe it.
We will talk about an increase in selfie deaths in just a bit.
Thanks, Coca-Cola.
Thanks. It's your fault.
Oh, they're going to Coca-Cola.
Someone's going to get sued.
Oh, not me. I love Coca-Cola.
I'll go to Coke prison for you guys. I'll do that for you.
Lewis Black has a great routine about Coke and Pepsi, and like, what's the difference? And like, if you go to a restaurant,
there's a difference.
Yeah, I know. There's but if difference. You go to a restaurant and you say, "I'll have a Coke," and they say, "No, we only have Pepsi," what do you? You storm out. You say, "No, well,
I say
I'm
no.
Not I'm not eating here.
I'm not having that.
Oh,
no,
dear.
That's not even. I'm too." I'm just
well, I'm glad you're brand loyal. You see, Coke. You see. Coke did try that "I'd like to teach the world to sing" thing. Remember, they did that touchy-feely, mm-hmm. perfect harmony and all that stuff.
Money, now. Uncle Leo. Money.
My money or Coke's?
Your money.
My
you
money.
You got to make it. You got to read them ads.
Don't worry. It's all trickled down. You're going to get yours.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. This show is... I really do feel like a company that's well-run would look long-term and say, ultimately, our success requires a consumer base that has the money to spend and the interest to spend on our products. So focusing all the revenue into this company, you know, isn't a good long-term strategy. But they don't seem to be thinking long-term. They seem to think quarter to quarter. They want to make the stock market happy. So they don't care. They don't care if nobody can afford brownie paper towels or quilted northern toilet paper in 20 years because they're going to make it now. And that's why I'm going to pause for this commercial break.
This is amazing. I was like, well, how is this related to that?
Baratunde, it's so nice to have you. Baratunde.com, Baratunde.com. He's at Baratunde. Now that he's freed from the chains of Trevor Noah, he can join us and speak to us. Was it fun working there? It was crazy, I think.
Yo, it was absolutely fun and absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And at times, absolutely unbearable. Like, it's the most difficult job I've ever had, hands down. And I would do it all over again, yeah. Also hands down.
Were so you doing no social regret. Media for them? What were you doing?
That is a vast subset of what I was doing. So I had this lofty title, which is supervising producer.
Oh, wow.
I created a department that had not existed there before, so... We called it the expansion team, and it was all things digital, which included representing the show online and in social media. It also included helping the show create its on-air content in a way that was more digitally sound right. or relevant. And it included creating all original content that was not in any way connected content-wise to what was airing on television last night or the upcoming night.
Was that forward-thinking of them, or is every show now on the network, at every network, doing that?
I mean, to some degree, everybody's doing that. I'd like to think I had a more robust and comprehensive and probably insane, intense level of
right.
what I set the bar for that. But I can't imagine any show that's not dabbling in at least some of those areas, and everybody understands the value of being on social media.
But it has to be organic. It has to be native. It can't feel like
yeah.
you're trying, you know, it can't be obvious that the point of all this is to get, you know, get more viewers, right? It has to
be. No, that's and people have gotten way more sophisticated in terms of watch our show tonight
right.
at 9, 8, 7 central, what have you, to extending for fiction and like scripted series, extending characters between seasons so that they live and continue to have drama and scenes play out on Tumblr or in YouTube micro series and things like that. So they recognize the power of these nonlinear formats to extend story. That's been pretty exciting to see. And then I think the thing that got me the most excited was that third type. Like, how do you create new stuff that is, you know, inspired by and in the voice of The Daily Show, but not in a 22-minute video format for distribution through a proprietary cable network, but instead, how do you right. make an interactive, you know, app or a mockery of the March Madness? In this case, we did a third month mania, where instead of basketball teams, it was issues and people and who you hated the most, like which made you madder, was it Bill Cosby or Martin Shkreli? Is it tangled headphones or taco trucks?
Do I have to choose one?
Well, in the end, the people chose, and there was this big tournament, and it came down to like climate change versus Trump supporters.
Wow.
And which one are Americans the most mad at? And in a prescient move, Trump supporters beat out
yeah.
Climate change. So this is, look, obviously a satirical construct, But there was a technically sound build. Like, it was super interactive.
Yeah.
And lots of jokes in it. So that's a flavor of what the job was. And I think I'll say one last thing off the pedestal, because I think people are listening that this may matter for. It was so much less about what I brought to that show in terms of, like, I came in with 50 ideas and we did 13 of them or something like that. And I think for me, it was the humbling excitement of being able to unlock what was already there and just showing people a new way to. It's almost like being a language instructor. And when people can start to, like, express themselves
in
a new language, you can, once you can make a joke in another language, like, you're really
right.
You get the language. So once you can make a joke with the internet or a joke with technology or with VR or with various flavors of these things, you realize, like, yo, I'm really funny. Like, I can do this in multiple languages, but not just spoken ones. And so I think we were able, our team, to work with folks who are already there, show them some new things, and, like, collaboratively unlock some more, you know, creative and comedic potential that didn't necessarily fit in that 22-minute video over a proprietary cable network package.
It's so funny because, of course, Tech TV back in 98 when we started, you would think that'd be the first, you know, channel to really get that. And it was just as much of a battle. And I don't know if I ever spoke their language, frankly. I don't think they learned. But it's really interesting to watch this evolve over time.
Well, and it's hard. I mean, look, you see the people who are just starting always have the advantage. It's the African nations who go straight to mobile and don't rip up their streets to put copper in the land, which sounds backwards. So if you get to start right now and the future's just a second ahead of you, you're going to be more futuristic. If you have to adapt a 20-year operating strategy and maintain all the legacy networks and personalities and billing systems, it's hard. And I've been in this position multiple times now with, like, older media organizations stepping more aggressively into the future. And
you worked at The Onion. The Onion got it, right?
I was there for 5 years. Yeah, The Onion, I mean, that was another great job, one of the best jobs I ever had. And The Onion went pretty blazing into the future. But it wasn't, I mean, I had a lot of internal conversations, shall we say, to try to justify and explain and convince and show why this matters, why it's not just some kind of vanity project, but why it's maintaining relevance and interestingness. Ultimately, like, the world changes, we change with it. That's kind of how things have always been.
It's great to see you again. I missed
you. Great to be. Oh, can I say one more thing? And then I'll be. I am on the National Geographic as a correspondent.
Oh, neat.
There's a new show called Explorer. It airs right after their Mars show on Monday nights. And I am all up in the second episode on November 21st. So for those who are listening in time to catch it or catch it on demand, tune into Nat Geo Explorer, where you'll see me doing field pieces and panel discussions and all kinds of fun stuff.
And what is the topic of this episode?
The topic of this episode largely has to deal with criminal justice in America.
Interesting.
So Nat Geo, you know, obviously goes to the bottom of the sea, satellites, ancient pyramids, but they're taking this explorer concept into also social issues and human interest and whatnot. So I did a story about policing outside of New Orleans. There's a story about private prisons, and there's a really amazing story about honey. That I think helps bring
honey seekers pursue a new high. I think that's you walking by the Gretna City Hall right there in that image.
That's me. That's me walking by.
Love that.
Not getting stopped like O'Doctor might have.
O'Doctor's also here. Owen, JJ Stone, IQMZ.com. And of course, lovely to have Georgia Dow. I almost called you Greta Dow. I don't know why. Greta Dow is with us. You look like you could be a Greta.
I could be a Greta.
Yeah. We still don't know what your real name is. Shh, don't say. I like having a little mystery.
Don't do it, Owen.
Two things. Two things. Baratunde, is your boy Black Trump still online? Your boy BlackTrump.com?
It is.
Okay, that's my jam. That's my jam.
Yeah.
And second thing, Leo, for the love of Jiminy Christmas, I'm going to sip on this tea while you do this read, man. Can we?
That is a big-ass bottle. Is that sweet tea? Because that's
a big dude.
That's going to kill you.
This is lemon tea with all natural flavors by Pico. Don't ask me no questions. Get to this read.
Okay. We're going to talk about Audible.com. You know why? Because Audible.com is the best place to listen to Baratunde read How to Be Black, right? Did you ever put that on audible.com?
Yeah, I read it myself.
That's what I thought.
Yep.
In his own voice, ladies and gentlemen.
This voice. You can hear it again and again and again.
Just one of many, many. Oh, look. Issa Rae has a book. Nice. Yep.
And a great new HBO show called Insecure.
I love Insecure. It is wild. It is so funny. Anyway, this is the deal. You get two books at audible.com right now for free if you go to audible.com/twit. Two, Trevor Noah's got a new one, Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Lots of books. If you like science fiction, if you like history, if you like self-help, it's endless. Stephen Levy's amazing Hackers. If you're into technology and you haven't read Hackers, now's the time. And you can listen to it for free. What we're going to do is go to get you two books for free. You're going to go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's a two-book-a-month account. Lisa's listening to this one right now, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fig. She loves it. She says it's a great book. I still have to work on that a little bit. The new Rogue One novel, Catalyst. If you go to audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the two-book-a-month plan, the Platinum plan. You also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal and the or the New York Times, so you can listen to news as well as great literature and books. And you get to pick two books. Now, here's the deal. If at any time in the first 30 days you say, it's nice, but not for me, you can pay nothing, just cancel, and you'll pay nothing, and you'll get to keep those books forever, which is one of the things I like about Audible. It's like a bookshelf. I've been an Audible member since the year 2000 for 16 years.
Me too.
Have you really been that long?
Yeah, back before they were acquired by anybody, back when you had this special little dinky MP3 player.
Remember they had the Otto, O-T-T-O?
Yeah, I was an original books, like I used to check out books on tape
yes.
in the public library as a yes. junior high school student.
Yes.
Had a long commute to school, and Autumn Reverse was a big deal.
Yes.
You know, and the cassette would play the B-side without you have to take it out and flip it over. So I've been very committed to audio consumption. Of books, and Audible makes that addiction much easier to service.
It was such a huge thing for me when I didn't have to send the cassettes back after 30 days because I would never finish a book. And it was, you know, and so Audible, you get to keep it forever. So it was, and you could download it instantly. So very frequently I'll say, oh, I got to read that, and I'll download it, and I've listened, and it's just, anyway, audible.com/twit2, two books for you. Pick two books. It's going to be hard. Here's Robert Scoble's book now is now out on audible.com. I think he's got a new one coming. This is not the new one. His new one is coming, but it's not out yet. Tim Wu has a new one called The Attention Merchants, which is a highly, highly recommended book.
I got to read that.
Yeah,
I
he's
loved him.
Really good. He wrote the Master Switch.
Yeah.
And this one is absolutely timely about the barrage of advertising, branding, sponsored social media, commercials, all attempting to harvest the one thing we've got to offer them, our attention.
I see what you did there, Leo. In the middle of an ad, you plugged a book that's critical of ads. That's nice.
Hey, stop it. So you're not supposed to call attention to that. I'm a little subversive sometimes, huh? Audible.com/twit2. This isn't an ad. This is a song of love to Audible. Really, seriously, to audible.com. And you might want to check out Paul Beatty's newest, The Sellout. All right, so there we go. There we go. Audible.com/twit2. Two books await for free. We're talking about the week's tech news. We have, actually, it's in the other room, the new Apple MacBook. We did an interview yesterday on the new screensavers with Kyle Weens. He's at iFixit.com, and as you know, iFixit does teardowns of all of the new stuff whenever it comes out. They did a teardown on the new MacBook. It's kind of part of their mission, which is to kind of make repair manuals, tools, and parts available for everything. So one of the things they do when they do a teardown is they rate these things on how easily you can repair them. The new MacBook got a repair factor of 1, repairability of 1.
On a scale of what?
Out of 10. The lowest. I said, could you go lower? He said, well, I guess you could get a 0.
But could you not, in fact, see that as the best, like it's number one. Maybe that's what they meant.
That's
like,
what Tim Cook says. It's a beautiful thing, but in their haste to make thinner, lighter notebooks, what Apple's really done is make notebooks with that. There is, it's not upgradable. You can't add
it's
RAM.
It's a big iPhone.
iPhone. It's exactly the model. Even down to the point where not only the battery is not removable, they're so heavily glued in. Kyle said it was almost impossible to get them out. We had infinite patience. That it's also, and this is the thing that really bugs me, not recyclable. He says,
really?
Yeah. He says, we hear from recyclers all the time who have fires from lithium ion batteries. They're either left in by accident or we didn't find it. And when they grind it up, of course, as with any lithium ion battery, it explodes and it bursts into flame. And it's a real problem for recyclers to the point where this is going in the landfill. This is not going to be recycled.
Wait, so Apple, I remember years ago, Apple getting heavily criticized for like burning down the earth and being bad citizens of the world. But they came back and they're like, oh no, but we do this and we have our new building's going to be LEED certified. It's a spaceship. It can take us to Mars if the earth ever melts down. Like, I remember that press conference.
Yeah. And they're a member of EPEAT, you know, and their stuff is EPEAT certified. But I have to think it has a little bit to do with the millions of dollars they gave EPEAT more than the sustainability of electronics. Here's what I'm going to propose. By the way, it's not just Apple. It's everybody. This is the Google Pixel. Sealed battery, right? It may be possible to take it apart and take the battery out easily. I don't know. But I think increasingly the drive towards thinner electronics is driving us towards sealed cases and batteries. Remember the days when you could take the back of a phone and replace the battery or pop the battery out of a laptop and put a new one in? I mean, the battery goes bad in a few years anyway. Yeah. They're essentially making disposable electronics. And this is an awful big chunk of disposable electronics.
But are you sure that Liam can't take the battery out?
Liam cannot take the battery out. And by the way, so I asked that.
And Liam has a very particular set of skills.
Yes, he does. It's called iPhone.
He was meant
Liam,
for
Liam
this.
Is not ready for Westworld yet.
So I asked Kyle, doesn't Apple recycle these? Because you're supposed to bring your old stuff back to Apple. He said, I know the recycler that Apple uses. No. And
wow.
So here's the issue.
That's a crime, man.
Going forward, I think we as consumers, for our own benefit, because replaceable batteries are good for us. It keeps electronics lasting longer. If you have a cell phone with a replaceable battery, you can put a second battery in. And it's good for the environment. Shouldn't we start demanding not thinner and lighter, but removable batteries and recycling?
Go ahead, doctor. First of all, I hate this new laptop. I hate this new direction that Apple is going into. They're not going into the Pro Series when people used to create content. Now they want a Pro Series for you to consume.
Yeah, this is
content.
Basically an iPad with a
so
keyboard.
Well put. Can you just repeat that, O-Doctor? I want to take these people to church. Can you repeat that?
Preach, O-Doctor.
So first of all, I'm just go and then I'm going to stop. You make a laptop with only C ports in it, and then you put a headphone jack in it. After you just told me that you were magically getting rid of my headphone jack that I try to put into this iPhone 7 Plus repeatedly. Now, why is it in that, and you can't have a way for me to just plug my phone into my laptop and charge it when I'm on the go and I got stuff to do? And instead, now I have to pull out this dongle and look like a doofus. But you couldn't put an SD card reader in it because you told me aerodynamics. And I'm thinking this dongle is aerodynamic. Everything is wrong with this thing. You told me. Did you see the DJ with the little scroll bar? No, don't. I'm not done. Did you see the DJ with a stupid little scroll bar? Any professional knows how to use the function keys to get around any of these pro tools that they're using. It's so insane the things that they're doing. I never miss Steve Jobs. I thought to myself, he's a man I never met. I don't need him, but I miss him so much because it's so ridiculous, the stupid stuff that they're doing. And if you wanted my grandmom to have a MacBook Pro, then maybe you shouldn't charge $3,000 for it, you stupid doofus. I don't need it, and it makes me so mad because I need a new computer, and I'm going to have to go back to Microsoft because they're the only ones out
here.
Can
I tell you something?
Did you see that? That sexy 28-inch tablet that you can roll down and scroll down and write on with. Where is Apple's innovation? Y'all ain't got no magic. Y'all ain't got no courage. And I'm going to stop yelling because people get mad because I yell on the show. But I hate it so much. It makes me so sad.
We need a moment. We just need a moment of silence to appreciate the Bill Cosby mixed with Homer Simpson rant that we just heard.
Oh my God.
That was the most beautiful thing I've heard on this show in years. Oh, Doctor, I want to find you and hug you, but I know you're in a non-disclosed black site operated by the CIA.
I'm going to the city for you,
so
bro.
I don't want to find you. That was amazing.
Dude, it hurts my heart. I need to spend 3 G's on a laptop, and I can't bring myself to do it. I need one, and I can't do it right now because I'm so upset. And I don't want to go back to Microsoft. I dumped her a long time ago. But now she out here looking sexy, though, put on a cute dress and lost 50 pounds. I said, go back.
So... I have no words.
I'm sorry.
Georgia, what do you think about that?
Well, Georgia writes for iMore, which is an Apple.
I do, and I think Renee's watching the show, so I have to be really careful what I say if I still want to have a job after this. I'm not getting it. Yeah. I'm not getting it. I like my ports. I don't like doing the...
It's really like clear to me Apple has become a fashion brand, not a technology brand.
And that's I like fashion. No,
right.
I can do fashion.
And just like fashion,
it's but gorgeous.
Yes, it's form, not function.
Like, beautiful.
Yes.
She's beautiful, but she's got the power of, like, you know, a calculator.
Real computers are ugly. This is a real computer. It's ugly.
They can do both. They can be beautiful, and I can still have my ports. There is no reason you had to get rid of them. And then you give me the 3 millimeter. I'm absolutely with Owen on that. I like the touch bar. I want it to be a touch screen. And yeah, I look at Microsoft.
Love the touch screen.
It looked good. It looked really
sexy. Ain't got a touch screen yet. And then they come out with a $300 book. I'm gonna take this fingernail polish and go into a store and just dump it all over.
Oh God, don't do that. No, don't do that. No, come on now.
You're lucky you're in your dark location now.
They're going to sue me to get that money. A $300 coffee book with Apple stuff in it.
Oh, yeah. Real. There you go. How about that? A $300 book.
Leo's are two of those books.
I didn't buy that book. I did not buy that book.
Here's what I think. You're going to put them for the holidays.
That's why.
No.
Here's what I think we might be missing with Apple. They take the removable battery away. Only so that in 3 years they can unveil
the first removable battery.
And it's a
The first removable battery.
That's never before seen. No one's ever done. It's like when they introduced copy and paste to a modern computing platform known as the iPhone 6 months to 12 months after it was released. I'm still stuck, honestly, on the wastefulness of it all, where they want you to throw this away, where you can't take it for repairs, where it's going to explode if you take it to a recycling plant.
Refurb most of them. The book is a different thing. The book is just, you know, that's just for them to
they're selling their own advertising.
$300.
They're selling their own advertising and people will buy it.
There's the non-existent AirPods.
I'm so happy I have a gift for Nate. He's hard to buy for, so.
Yeah, Nate'll want this.
One second. The thing we always have to remember, too, about recycling is, to be fair, Apple computers get the best shelf life known to man. You people have laptops for 3-4 years, still throw them up on eBay and get a G for them, and they still roll. Like, I know this chick, she's still rocking with one of those old white MacBooks, and I'm like, is this something from 2005, and she still uses
it.
And it runs. Apple does make a better quality product that lasts longer than a disposable Windows machine. I'll give them that.
Now that they're making supersized iPhones, I don't know if that's going to be true anymore. I mean, this is a weird shift, and it doesn't have the creative power like you said yourself. I'm honestly thinking, this is not a commitment, but it is a public exploration. Like, I've been in this Apple ecosystem for a long time. I used to build my own PCs. I used to try to play with Linux on the side. And then I just got suckered because Apple made it easy. And I could do other things with my time. But I feel a loss of freedom and self. And I'm not trying to have that. So I'm really considering doing the PC thing just to diversify my interface. Yeah. You know, every once in a while, I'll switch my mail app, my calendar app, just to change the interface so I don't get too hooked on what somebody thinks I should see the world as. And Apple has gotten me, like, deep into their world with Apple TV and iTunes and everything else. And this laptop, I'm probably not going to get it, but it's like another little symbol. Like, why would I give them everything? and at least spread pieces of me around. Like, if you're going to exploit me, I'm going to make it as hard as I can and still, you know, have a life that functions in the modern world.
Here's Colbert.
That's smart. You play hard to get.
This is the new Apple book.
At Apple, we've always strived for innovation. There was the iBook, the MacBook, and now the most advanced book we've ever made, the Apple Book.
It's 450 pages of high-resolution images of Apple products you probably already have in your basement.
Using the latest and most innovative technology from 1440, we were able to take an experience that was instantly familiar and charge $300 for it.
Its touch page technology allows you to simply swipe your finger on a page to turn it.
We also wanted to make a completely intuitive experience. So the Apple Book's pages are sequential. 60 is followed by 61, which is followed by 62, followed by 63.
Why is it Apple is so easily parodied now? Is that a sign of a company that is not...
When you take yourself too seriously.
You take yourself too seriously.
The true sign is that audience thinks that that book is fake.
Right.
The audience thinks that that book is the joke, and it's real.
It's not. It's real. I think they become a fashion company. I think somebody somewhere said, you know what, where the profits are is at the high end. We make high-end products because the PC is dying, and we don't know what the hell to do with it. And
who's going to make the stuff that the people consume? They're literally making consumption machines, right, but people need to produce with them.
It's not their job.
Snapchat will make that, Doctor.
The glasses. You go get them. Go to Big Sur.
Can we talk about Snapchat?
No, yeah, let's take a break, then we'll talk about Snapchat. How about that?
Okay.
That's O-Doctor, Owen J.J. Stone. Love having you on the show, and love the rants, my friend. What was
love
it?
You
what
too.
Was it, Baratunde? The Simpsons meet?
I feel like there was a heavy Bill Cosby, but there was a little bit of Homer Simpson. There was a little "Why you little?" Like, there was that going on too. And then, I mean, there was a get off my lawnness to it. There was like
it's
the
so
back
beautiful.
In my day. We used to have an Iceman with a carriage, a chisel, and now the ice just comes out of my freezer magically. I don't trust this ice. Why can't I get ice the old-fashioned way? Like, it was 80% on point, but there was like 13%. I'm like, I think you're probably wrong, but I'm going to go with you because I'm already.
Yeah, when I make up stuff, it sounds good though, right?
Yeah. No, hard numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody else around me. 83%
and 92% of the stuff I say is 100% legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, here the fabulous Georgia Dow, and her videos now. I bet. Have you noticed a big increase in sales of the anxiety videos? Are they just they're going through the roof now? Right.
Unfortunately, yes. And I guess fortunately, yes.
It's kind of a comment, isn't it? So if Georgia is besides being one of the nicest people in the world and a writer for iMore is also a psychotherapist, and you and your partner have a website, anxiety-videos.com, where you can get lots of stuff to help you sleep better, help you relax, help you get rid of the anxiety. Anxiety's a problem in this modern
anxiety
age.
Yeah, we just did one on depression as well, especially at this time of year. There's a lot of seasonal affective disorder that's coming around, or, you know, post-election depression. Like, it's just people are really shocked for many different reasons. The holidays, family, it's a little bit of a rough time of year.
You're lucky. You guys.
Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Right. It's true. Westworld. Yeah. There's stressful stuff
happening. You guys are lucky in Canada. You had Thanksgiving in October. That was smart to have it before the U.S. election.
Yes.
We are going to have to suffer, all of us, through Thanksgiving. Some of us will be with loved ones who hate us. Did you see the 19 questions the New York Times suggested that you prepare for your Thanksgiving dialogue? 19 questions you should ask the people that you are sitting with to ask the loved ones for Thanksgiving.
I think we should ask all those questions of the various bots that are available online and see how well they do with it.
Did you see it, Georgia? Because
No.
19 questions to ask the loved ones who voted the other way.
This is supposed to be to have a good Thanksgiving or to have a really bad Thanksgiving?
Well, it's very psychotherapeutic, right? So you sit down, do it over a meal or drink, Offer the benefit of the doubt. Assume the other person has generally good intentions. Almost everyone does. Don't let imperfect word choices tank the conversation. Forget policy debates. Then say, describe your relationship to me. Are we close?
Okay, can we? I'll just say it too soon. Don't do this. Don't do this.
Anyone who did I watching, vote for and
don't,
why?
Don't.
What was the most important issue for me? Why do you feel differently about that issue? How do you think our views came to be so different? Has it been difficult to talk to me about this election? If so, why?
Can I say something about me sound like a bad person?
Yeah.
I was at the grocery store the other day, and it was like super packed because everybody's Thanksgiving and stuff. And I was talking to this nice older lady. We're talking about hams. And this gentleman bumped into her cart. And she pulled her cart back, and the guy didn't say, excuse me. And for some reason in my heart, I just wanted to yell Trump America right in his face. Like,
No, that's the wrong.
It came in my mind like Trump.
I know. Trump is the new Tourette's. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Bad in my heart. I was like, what is wrong with me? Why do I want to do that?
You need to get a Twitter account, Owen.
No, we need to talk the show. No, you can't. Don't do that. People. What happens to people when they have a any subject that they are really strong and passionate about is that, you know, the limbic part of your brain, like the lizard part of your brain, takes over and it shuts off your working memory. Yep. So there is not much you're working with.
Nope.
Don't do that. Nope. You want to enjoy your turkey and all of the gravy and goodness. You don't want to have a fork flying across the table.
Don't become part of the lizard people, Owen.
So Georgia,
don't ask these questions.
Could you, like, as a service, as a generous Canadian service, as an act of neighborliness, could you reframe those 19 New York Times questions into something that won't get people stabbed in the face with a fork at the Thanksgiving dinner?
I got
table?
One. What do you think of the weather? How's it? It's a beautiful day, isn't it? How's that turkey for you? A little dry? Good? You like it? And then get controversial. So breast side up or down? You know, really?
Breast or leg man? Yes.
Yeah.
Anything else. You really like this is just people are up in arms on both sides of the fence to that. You don't need to make your family members more upset or upset. It's too soon. Don't do it.
Probing the bad tooth with your tongue. This is not a good idea.
So maybe
this is great for people that are moderately
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Save it for St. Patrick's Day.
Wait until people feel more at ease. Don't do that. People are really
by the way, the last two questions, what do you think we agree on? And the last question is actually so sad. Do you still like me?
Thank you, New York Times. This is mob mentality. You should never ask a large group questions like that because they could turn on you at any second.
These are one-on-one
conversations on the internet that you ask. You call your mom on the phone. You don't go face-to-face.
I've always hated you.
At your head.
Let's take a break. We're going to talk about something else that you probably don't want to do around this time of year, and that's go to the post office. The holidays are coming. You know what they call that at the post office? Amateur hour. If you use the postal service for business, maybe you sell on Etsy or eBay or Amazon, or maybe you send out bills or invoices or brochures. If you're doing business in the post office, you don't want to go to the post office when all the non-business users are there tying up the post office. Traffic, parking, it's going to be packed, everybody mailing holiday gifts. But the truth is, year-round, you can save time, save money, save anxiety by using Stamps.com. Stamps.com online lets you buy and print official U.S. postage from your computer, your printer. It's not a postage meter. You can use what you've already got. In fact, they will send you for free a digital scale worth $50 so that you can weigh every package and have exactly the right postage. You could print the postage right on the envelope, or you could print a label for a box, any kind of mailing. Any kind of mailing. You can print on plain paper, an envelope. They have stamps.com labels that let you actually print stamps. You can have your company logo on it. The return address is automatically filled in. It's
this
cray-cray.
This can't all be true, Leo.
It's all true.
All be true.
Oh, wait. There's more. If you go to stamps.com right now and click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T, and not only will you get the scale, you will get $55 in coupons for free postage.
What? Free money?
Free money. And because they do charge you for shipping of the scale, it's $5. They'll give you a $5 supply kit. And, of course, a month free of stamps.com. So it all works out to about $110 value. And I'm telling you, it is the most professional way. You want to look professional. If you sell on Etsy, Maybe on Etsy you don't mind having a brown paper package wrapped with twine and about 100 Amelia Earhart stamps on it, but most of us would like to look a little more professional, and this is what it'll do. Plus, it'll save you time. It even fills out the forms for certified mail and customs forms for overseas mail, stuff like that. It's so great. And then the mail carrier comes to you and picks it up. You can have a nice conversation. You can ask the mail carrier, do you like me? Stamps.
We want to mail more stuff.
It does. Stamps.com. Use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. It does make you want
to
mail more stuff.
Next time you're tempted to post a picture on Instagram,
mail
you
it.
Should put it out and mail it. Mail it to all your followers.
Mail it first, then you'll know.
I
Do
thought,
they have this in Canada?
Yeah, but it's not stamps. It's somebody else.
And mail it back.
So I thought, I bought letterpress cards that said from the desk of the chief twit, and I bought like envelopes and fountain pens. I thought I would just hand write answers to people. And then
you never sent me my handwritten letter.
I wrote one, and my hand ached so bad. I haven't done any since. I can't write anymore.
You owe me a letter.
I owe you a very nice thank you note.
If you're giving one to Owen, I want a letter as well.
See, now you're doubling up, and I'm not going to get mine, but Lisa sent one in his place. I know the handwriting. I saw it.
Did Lisa send you?
Yeah, she sent me one. She took care of it, but you still didn't do your job. That's a good woman you got. You're lucky.
It's not my fault I'm a lefty. Yeah. So she.
Snapchat.
So, Snapchat. Oh, Snapchat, baby. Snap, not Snapchat. IPO. They filed. This is the new thing. If you're not worth a certain amount, I don't know what the deal is, according to the Jobs
Billion?
Act. Yeah, there's some deal where you don't have to file publicly anymore for an IPO. So Snap, which is the corporate name now of Snapchat, has filed secretly for an IPO, which we expect will be about $25 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal.
That's already interesting, because IPO stands for Initial Public Offering.
Yeah, I know.
But you can file it secretly. Okay, continue.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't understand all this stuff, but I'm sure somebody could explain why this is a good thing. At some point, you have to get public because you have to sell the darn thing, but I guess they don't want
to. Maybe not. Maybe they'll be secretly public.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll change the whole game, the whole IPO game, and their stock will just disappear after 10 minutes. As soon as you own it, you won't own it anymore.
There you go.
So $25 billion with a B.
Mm-hmm.
Dollars, and that wouldn't even be the full valuation of the company. And what is Snapchat? It's an app, right? Is there anything more than the app?
Snapchat is a way of life, Leo. It's a new interesting reality. People have talked about virtual reality, augmented reality. Snapchat's just reality, and it's a window on reality.
Oh, reality.
It's whimsical.
Can I put it on a Coke bottle?
And it's attention. Basically, it's taking people's attention, and that's worth a lot of money. So that's why it's worth all that
money. Is it really, do you think, worth that much?
I'm not a numbers, finance, IPO person. But I suppose so. I mean, look, if someone believes enough that they can get that money back by selling washing machines as filters or whatever's going to come next – golf clubs attached to your earlobes. Maybe that'll be the thing that really puts it over the top and makes it worthwhile. Whatever's grabbing these many minutes of people's time a day, people assume is worth something. Whether they can get that money back, we'll see. I'm not so sure. I don't know if they should be able to, honestly. But the size doesn't shock me given how obsessive the use is and just how fun the thing is. It's kind of like a game and a social environment.
Owen, do you snap?
I have Snapchat. I look at other people's snaps. I do not snap.
I want to see, Owen, if you've ever used a filter. I want some photos on Twitter.
Look, I've used filters. Here's the thing. No Snapchat ain't worth this money. No Snapchat ain't never going to make this money. They ain't never going to get this money back. And the thing, I know, I understand the marketing because you use Snapchat how to get it, but I'm just saying, the demographic is like 13 and 19. What money do they got to buy the stuff that you're trying to sell that you think you're going to advertise to a 30-year-old that don't even cut grass because he's Snapchatting all day and got no time to have no real job because he's a lazy millennial or whatever the generation is now, 13-year-old? Why are they going to do so much money? Yes, there's a lot of people looking at it, but they ain't going to make this money back. They ain't going to make no money.
They're selling those spectacles. Are like
they're
like
not
crazy.
Even selling them. They're Where's Waldo-ing them? They're sticking them out in the forest. You go get 15 of them. People tweet about it and act like it's a big deal.
Well, that's good marketing. Yet. That's brilliant, right?
Oh, it's great marketing. That part of it, amazing.
Here
and,
it is.
And great.
Here it is by the, this is the Blue Whale of Catoosa, which is one of the attractions on Route 66. No, I know. Isn't that, that's kind of, maybe that's a little backhanded snap at Twitter. It's apparently an attraction on Route 66 in Oklahoma, the Blue Whale of Catoosa. And that next to it, that thing with the balloons is the vending machine for spectacles. So what you got to do is you got to follow spectacles on Twitter and wait for something like this. And then you go, oh, and you run. This was 5 a.m. on the 15th, a couple of days ago. And you run to the Blue Whale of Catoosa.
It's like Pokemon Go with real stuff.
Yeah. I can see how they might make money. I think you're right, Baratunde. They could make money, but the filters, right?
Well, not just the filters. They're like a TV network. And so they can insert video ads into that stream. I mean, it's very traditional.
Did your daily show strategy involve Snapchat?
It did. My personal strategy involves Snapatunde. That's my name.
Oh, I follow Snapatunde.
I'm trying to be.
You did.
Be that.
You were doing stories for a while. Do you still do those?
I haven't done a story in about a week. I don't know. Something happened a week ago that distracted me. I can't quite remember what it was.
So that's when you got to do stories, man.
But yeah, I'll be back on it, especially with my travels. I've done a lot of Snap stories. But, George, I feel like I cut you off. Were you about to say something about the Snapster?
No, I was just saying I like the filters. I'm not on Snapchat. I just use the filters, and then I screenshot the picture of me with the filter. Right. That's all I use it for. It's horrible.
That was
and I'm like the opposite of Owen. I'm like emojiing and like having all the pictures with the filters, and I
there
do that.
Might
I
be just want to... There might be a butterfly around my head picture somewhere. I'll DM it to you. I ain't going to put it out there in the world. There may or may not be me sipping on a Mai Tai somewhere on a fake beach. But I understand Snapchat because people in the chat are yelling at me. I understand the power of it. I understand the use of it. I just think the inflation and the hype on this product is not worth the money that they're trying to get when they go public. Regular suckers that don't know anything about anything are going to go dump their money in. These investors get their money back.
The case,
and
right.
then they don't.
That's
and,
doing
and
it,
that's
right?
the case.
Yeah,
they're saying it's worth this many billions so that when it comes down to like 900 million, you're like, this is a deal. Let's jump in.
Yeah.
But the thing is, everybody lives in kind of, it's got this kind of a almost casino mentality, like, or lottery ticket mentality. Well, mm-hmm. if I can just get that big score, and no one knows what the next big thing's going to be. It's probably, I got to be honest, it's probably not going to be Snapchat or Uber.
You have to have a product. You have to have a product. And Uber, at least Uber, has something that they sell to people. If Snapchat was already selling these filters and making
they do. They sell the filters. Like, they have filters, you know, Warcraft filters and filters for movies. And
I don't know how much money they're making. They're a private secret open IPO. I don't know that they're making money. I don't know that right now. So, in my mind, they're not making any money.
I doubt they're making money. I doubt they're making money.
Uber, at least Uber's got a plan. Hey, we build our backs with people. We run out the taxi industry. Then we dump all those people in the street and buy autonomous cars and rake in the cash. At least I get that.
Uber's
plan
is to exploit everybody as fast as possible.
Exactly. That makes money. I'd put money in that. Like I said, I'd put money in Tesla because they make things. You know. But all these fake, look at these Twitter stocks now. How's Twitter working out for you? Anybody rich yet?
You can't do this on Twitter.
Are you snapping?
You don't
right
have
now,
my over the shoulder shot, do you?
Man.
This is really great for the listeners.
You know what? All they have to do is imagine me doing some filters
dog,
on Snapchat.
He's got the dog snap.
I saw I was at a conference with about a week ago, and I saw someone walking around with a crown of flowers on her head.
Like this?
And I was like, oh my God, Snapchat filters are in real life now. This is IRL Snapchat. And I was braced to see someone with a dog tongue.
Like, you've never been to a hippie convention? That's like from
not
the 60s.
Like this. I mean, it was a spitting image. No, it wasn't from hippie. Snapchat invented the flower crown, Owen. I don't know where you've learned your history, okay? But Snapchat started it, and everybody's trying to be like Snapchat. That's how this works.
I don't see any sponsor. I'm looking for sponsored ones on here right now.
I'm just waiting for InstaSnap to start giving me some filters. Then I'll be happy. I'm all grammed out. I'm on the gram.
But Bertone, when you did your stories, you didn't use these filters. You just you took videos and pictures, and you do a little text illustration.
I use the filters sometimes more for effect, but not so much with the crowns and things on my own face. I wasn't doing funny voices and like animal faces and things like that. I much preferred to just put weird things next to each other or try to tell an actual story. I do ride-alongs and point of view. Most of the time, the camera's not actually on my face. It's on the world because I happen to think the world is still interesting.
Yeah.
And so I try to share my view of it rather than just – people can just look at my profile picture and see my face. So I think I would show them what I'm actually seeing often more interesting.
That's when I knew Hillary Clinton was going to lose, actually, is when I saw the – And I wish I told people because I forgot to tell people. Yeah, I could have warned you.
Way to be helpful. When did you know?
She was at a rally and was standing there kind of forlornly, I thought, waving at people. Here's the picture. And nobody is looking at her. Every single person has their back to her, taking a selfie of them in front of her. That's when I thought, this country does not deserve. We just, it's over. It's just over.
What's up, Georgia?
I was just wondering, you were just talking about like the society has lost.
Yes.
And everyone's taking, they're so busy taking a picture that they're not actually sucking.
Yes, the election has nothing to do with a candidate. Or anything. And of course, The Guardian, I love this, Jonathan Joes says, those taking selfies with Hillary aren't narcissists, but our best hope. That's when I knew. This is our best hope?
Both.
I don't know. Tell me, what does this tell you about humanity?
Leo, this is the age of the memes. And the meme king won the presidency. The president-elect is the meme king, and that is what we want.
I'm thrilled to see him tweeting again because life is so much more interesting with an unfiltered president-elect Donald J. Trump. You've become inarticulate, Owen.
Yeah, I was about to curse because I just get so mad. The first thing I said after he won and he gave his little punk speech and he was congratulatory, I said, you know what? Just don't tweet anymore. Whatever else you got to do,
stop.
Tweeting, and he stopped for a while. I was like, "Oh, he heard me. He saw my tweet."
That's really when I was encouraged.
Now he's back, and I'm like, "Oh,
I think this is interesting because it's unmediated. We've never had this kind of unmediated direct access to the most powerful person in the world. I think it's fascinating."
Yeah, most of the other ones were busy thinking.
I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying it's really interesting. I don't know what it means, but.
No, he's been really accurate in describing where the public is. He was obviously very good at tapping into where enough of the public was to win the election. And he's like the next stage in the evolution of media.
Yes.
We used to have big networks and gatekeepers, and only a few people had a voice. And then we get radio, we get cable, we get all kinds of other modes of media that basically give more people the power to speak. And as we do that, our attention span gets shorter and shorter and shorter. So we have to get more and more stimulus in order to pay any kind of attention. And he knows that. We have infinite channels now because of the internet. We have Reddits and then subreddits. We have all this stuff. And he is like a walking, talking, animated GIF of noise. He is basically, like I described him, as a denial of service attack because he floods the system with so much that you can't actually respond. Like, and legitimate requests get blocked because he's talking about Hamilton and how they attacked his vice president, how it's unfair.
It's really interesting. You know, they used to call Reagan
the
Teflon president because nothing stuck to him. But this really takes it to a whole nother level. Well, he has figured.
He's the opposite of Teflon. He spews so much that you actually don't know what he's saying and you can't. Dodge this one? Should I react to this one? Is this legitimate? I should engage with this idea, or is this just to shift my attention away from the Trump University lawsuit?
I think a lot of Trump voters love this, that it's driving people crazy, right? They love
that's what our media primed us for.
It's bad journalism because the fact that this man could subvert bad news about himself with a tweet or two about a safe space, and he spent 2 years telling everybody that America was punks, is magical and powerful in itself. That journalism just isn't doing their job.
No, I don't think so. I think they're trying really hard. I don't think it matters.
I don't think it matters. Because the media business rewards clicks and the
clickbait.
I think there is a larger interesting story beyond just this, which is that because we live in a 24-hour news cycle and the rise of the news channels, there is a constant inundation of bad news and crisis news. It's in their interest to do that, right? To continually do that. I have to tell my mom, who's 83, she watches CNN. I have to say, stop it, because what you see for her, everything is burning down all the time.
Yeah,
because that's all. Of course, that's all it shows. We've tried good news. Nobody wants good news. So this is just we live in a media environment, and this is why I hate Twitter, because I think Twitter's, you know, kind of the epitome of this, of just this constant barrage of factoids. The whole fake news thing to me is a meaningless argument, because fake news wouldn't work if people didn't want to believe it and didn't want to spread it. We live in an environment where there is no truth, because it's not just Mr. Trump. It's everybody spewing all the time. And that's the environment we live in. And
I'm literally spewing right now.
At some point, I feel like I just want to turn off social media. And
Can I be fair for our audience and just something I tweeted earlier about Trump University? To be honest, Trump U was not a scam. In the end, the students learned what Donald Trump does and how he makes his money. Step one, sign up for something stupid. Step two, claim that stupid thing isn't your fault. Step three, cry to the public. Four, sue the stupid thing that you agreed to do. Step five, get paid 20 times your original investment. Step six, start your own stupid business with that cash you got. Step seven, fail at that too. Trump University is legit and viable. Well, they learned something from Mr. Trump.
And by the way, that's what every one of these there are millions of these, right? How to get rich quick schemes, where you go to a seminar and almost invariably the scheme is create a get rich scheme and have people come to a seminar and pay you a lot of money for a book.
Yeah, it's the opposite of pay it forward. It's like stealing.
Pay it backwards. The rise in selfie deaths. Back to Selfie Nation. This is from BBC's Newsbeat. The number of people who die each year taking a selfie is on the rise.
Wait, are those women dead in that picture?
Yeah, I think that's, I'm sure, stock photography.
I hope
they're not dead. But notice they are on a cliff and perilously close to the edge. In 2014, 15 folks died taking selfies. Last year, 39. This year, in the first 8 months, 73 people died taking selfies.
Honestly, I would expect that number to be much
higher. That doesn't sound
like
that many, really. I think that probably more people have died wearing flip-flops than taking selfies.
It's more people than had Note 7s explode.
I'm sure.
More people than died from marijuana, and that's illegal in half the country.
So a team of researchers has decided to create an app to warn people when they're doing something stupid that could kill you. In India, there are more selfie deaths related to trains because, according to these researchers, there's a belief that posing on or next to train tracks with your best friend is romantic and a sign of never-ending friendship. Bad idea.
Wow.
In the U.S. and Russia, a high proportion of deaths due to, what else, weapons.
Oh, I thought you were going to say driving.
Oh, by the way, for the first time in years, the highway death toll is rising dramatically because of distracted drivers. And some people blame Snapchat. There was a Snapchat filter that showed how fast you were going. And at least they believe some teenagers died because moments before they got in a horrific fatal crash, they were Snapchatting 115 miles an hour with pictures of them. I'm going 115, Ma!
Yeah, I don't like that. They need to put something in those apps for that where they shut down if your speed's going, if you're going too fast or something.
All you have to do is whenever you activate that filter, it should show the snap of the person who died using that filter.
There you go.
You can decide if you want to do that.
There you go.
Well, don't people have to be responsible for themselves?
Yes.
Like, really, there's a certain amount that you should know that if you're near a cliff, maybe that might be dangerous. Like people yes. fall off of things all the time without taking a selfie. I think that people need to learn, you know, sometimes by tripping and falling and hurting yourself, you learn, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have done that. We sometimes get so wrapped up in ourselves that we're not really thinking about it. I don't think that they need to give us any warning.
Distracted driving?
Be careful. That should be illegal. That's what we have laws
in Canada
that you get arrested and you're going to lose demerit points if you get caught. And there's cops that just, you know, take a look and see if you're using your phone while you're on there, and you're going to lose demerit points and lose your license for that. It's the same thing as drinking and driving.
I don't know what fatalities are like in Canada, but after steady declines over the last four decades, according to the New York Times, highway fatalities in the U.S. recorded the largest annual increase in 50 years. In fact, in the first 6 months of 2016, 10.4% increase year over year. And it's got to be technology, right?
Yes.
So maybe this is where we use that snooper charter from the UK. And then the government figures out when you're in your car using your phone, and then sends you a little note like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that. Or you get auto arrested, and it's for your own safety. So they're protecting you not from terrorism, but from your stupid self. That maybe that works. Probably not.
That's a good way to sell it, Baritone.
I'm trying to think outside the box. I'm trying to help the UK government, you know, violate civil liberties even more.
If you're not doing anything wrong while you're driving, you won't care that we're inside your phone.
Yeah, God, that's 10% jump. What happened in the 1 year, though? That's what shocked me.
I don't think it's just things like Snapchat. I think it's also that we've got now big consoles in our car, and we're fiddling with those because there's all this stuff going on.
Smart cars.
We're addicted to our technology. We can't stop. We think that we're going to miss out on that great tweet on Owen with the filter of the flowers on his head, and we don't want to miss out on that.
Exactly.
And we never even shut down. We can constantly be found at any point in time. You're on a date, you're going out somewhere, you're on holiday, people can find you. We never have any downtime. And that causes an addiction reaction inside of us. And so you end up going through withdrawal if you're even driving on a long trip and you can't message it. How many people have had it at a restaurant, you suddenly see your friend messaging or taking pictures of the food or answering this because this one's really important. We've not been able to unplug ourselves from our tech.
And it's not our fault.
What if it's not our fault?
It is.
No, it's not. I'll tell you why. Society of Neuroscience meeting in San Diego this week. There was a study. They took young mice and they exposed them to 6 hours daily of a sound and light show reminiscent of a video game. According to the director of the Center for Integrative Brain Research at Seattle's Children's Hospital, the mice showed dramatic changes everywhere in the brain. Many of those changes suggest that you have a brain that is wired up at a much more baseline excited level. You need more stimulation to get the brain's attention. What are we doing to our kids now? We're plunking them down in front of screens as young as 1 and 2 years old, and they have many more than 6 hours of screen time nonstop. Now, the debate at this event was, well, the benefits may outweigh the negative sides to this. An evolutionary biologist from UC Davis said a less sensitive brain might thrive in a world where overstimulation is a common problem. The American Academy of Pediatrics relaxed its longstanding recommendation against any screen time for kids under two. Now, it's just mice.
But we already know that, look, you don't hire psychologists, anthropologists, ethnographers, applied mathematicians, and other forms of mental manipulation artists for your various startups because you're trying to support science. Right? You do that.
Let's gamify everything.
Not for like some general grid. You're not a university here. You're not trying to educate the public. You're trying to maximize shareholder value. And so the thing that these companies are doing, and Tristan Harris, this is my public service announcement, here's my plug for somebody not named Baratunde. Everybody check out timewellspent.io. And he is a former product philosopher at Google. He's worked in the tech industry. He's worked in UX. And he's made the case that this black mirror in our hands is a slot machine. And it is the most advanced slot machine ever invented. It hacks into it, pushes all the low level buttons, and we don't actually control it. We are small, little, tiny specks against the great onslaught of trillions of dollars of investment in breaking down our willpower. And so we're encouraged, all the default settings, to share more, to open more, to feel socially obligated, to follow people back, to add more friends on something called LinkedIn for some reason. So I don't think it's as simple as we can stop and just take personal responsibility, because there's this collective irresponsible action happening with the backing of trillions of dollars that's financially very lucrative for them to win. And us standing alone against that is futile. Like, we need some way smarter systems on our side to help sway the balance a little bit.
This is a good resource. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
But that's never going to happen, right? Like, that's never going to happen. It's not the way that our economies work, unfortunately. We have to know and understand what we let our kids, it starts off with them, consume. So I deal in technology all day. Like, I have every single video game system under the sun, but my kids don't get to play but for maybe an hour or two a week of video games and TV, because I know what happens to their brains. Like, I just see it in my sessions all the time. You look, your kid looks like they're really calm, but their brain waves are flying. And after that, you get better at whatever you do. You are constantly, every moment of every second of every day, whatever you are doing, you are you're firing neurons together that will wire together to get better at whatever that activity is. So if you're consuming a lot of fast-paced media, you're going to get better at consuming fast-paced media. But then without that media, exactly as you said, Behramundi, is that, you know, you end up going through that withdrawal effect because of that, because no longer are you hooked up to something that you have gotten used to. And so we need to talk about it is the first thing, so that people understand, because they don't know how addicted they are until they end up going somewhere where they don't have any signal or they lose battery power and they feel that feeling of, oh my goodness, I feel like I've been disconnected from the world and I no longer feel as comfortable as I did before. So I think that, yeah, we are a certain amount responsible. And yes, companies definitely are spending a lot of money paying people in my field in order to make our levels of addiction even greater so that you'll buy more products. But that doesn't take us out of the equation. I think that you know, we are not mindless sheep going through to the slaughter. We are choosing to consume these products. And we need to say, when are we going to let ourselves calm down and shut ourselves down from them? And that's important.
So we definitely need to. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, it's definitely a lot to do with like your own personal control, even though the system is against you, because parents, especially with children. Now, when you're an adult, you make your own decisions. You look at that screen for 12 hours a day. That's on you. But when you have kids, if you're not a parent, you just stick that in front of them instead of giving them a book to read. That's on you. Like my daughter, you know, she's got the phone, got the tablet, all that stuff. But in the car, she's not allowed to play on a tablet. She has to read books. And when we get home, she has to read for an hour before she can get on the thing. But she's watching this one show. It's called Pat and Jen. She doesn't want to watch any TV shows. All she wants to do is watch Pat and Jen. And I'm like, what is this Pat and Jen? I turn around, I look at it. I'm like, okay, it's something stupid. I went to her room when she was sleeping because she was talking her sleep. Now, she's never cussed in her life. I never heard her cuss. Now, they say hell and damn on there. And she's cussing in her sleep, repeating Pat and Jen. I was like, yo, she woke up next time. I'm like, ain't no more Pat and Jen for 2 weeks. She's like, what happened? I'm like, no, dude, like, you in here repeating. She's like, I did. I'm like, yes. Like, it's in your brain, and there's no more Pat and Jen. You can watch something else. You can read some more, but you can't watch that show because it does program children, especially. Like, adults, like I said, that's your own personal choice. You don't do it. But as an adult, we need to watch out for our kids and help them not be addicted. That's why I cut her off in the car and all her friends complain. I'm like, you got music, you got each other. Let's talk or listen to the radio, but you don't need to have your face in a screen 24/7. So there is some personal accountability, even though the machine is against us. It is against us.
This is, by the way, why I don't have you guys on the show all the time, because it's too stimulating. And we really want this show to be more boring and relaxing and calming. So to lower your
amazing.
Yeah.
I thank you, Georgia, for making such a strong case for the power of humans. And I definitely don't mean to imply that we are not part of the equation. And you're right. We do have some choice in it.
But so do companies have some responsibilities.
Well, no, but I think our power as individuals is overrated in a case like this, where they're using the best of science against us and no individual has those resources to combat it. But I also think it's a little too defeatist to say we can't do anything about it beyond individual action. And that's like some of the greatest changes in the history of the world is when we've come together and said, that's not acceptable. We don't have children working in labor camps for the most part anymore, even though that was normal. Like, the economy was powered by it, but it no longer is, because we kind of drew some line, and it wasn't just the goodwill of people. It was like a lot of sticking together from folks who had something to lose and others who felt like allied with it. And this, I'm not even trying to fully equate to child labor, but I'm just saying, like, that was a big deal that people could never have imagined not existing anymore. And I think if we don't acknowledge that the power to combat this has to involve something on par with the power that's suppressing our individuality, which isn't just personal choice, then we're not going to fight it the right way. And so at a minimum, just like you have people trying to get unaddicted to cigarettes and they use nicotine patches and there's programs, like, if that's just for cigarettes, which is relatively minor compared to all the mind hacking going on in your Instagram feed alone, like, why is the feed bottomless? This is one of Tristan's major points. Like, any service that gives you an infinite scroll is attacking your mind, because it's luring you constantly. You never finish. What if you a book that had infinite pages? You would never finish the book. Right? That's psychotic.
Wow.
But that's Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. That's the default setting, because it benefits them and not us to stay on that system all the time. And we can't just fight that one person at a time. We can at a minimum have some tech tools to help us know how much time we've spent, to set some personal limits, or at least assist us in maintaining our willpower and those declarations that we make. Otherwise, those declarations are pretty meaningless compared to all this science that's fighting us, I think.
We have only a few more minutes with Baratunde, like four.
Oh, and I've updated. I got a new GPS route. Speaking of tech, that's helping me be mindless.
And, do you have a little more time with us?
I can go until at least 8 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, that'd be so great. Okay, yeah. We got 11 more minutes with Baratunde.
That's double. I just doubled
it. I don't want to waste that time, but I quickly need to take a break, and we'll have more Baratundes here. Georgia Dow, Oh Doctor. I love these guys, and I love this panel. Thank you for being here today. It really is fantastic. Our show today brought to you by Harry's, for guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. You know, I started growing a beard. I wanted to be like Baratunde. And, man, I went out. It's expensive. Having a beard, I thought this would save me time and money. I had to get beard oil, beard balm, beard comb, beard brush, beard shampoo. And then I said, screw it. I'm going back to Harry's. And I shaved.
A whole beard ecosystem.
I had a beard ecosystem. And now I don't know. I'll send it to you. Harry's is awesome. In fact, they've got the brand new. This is a great gift idea. Certainly, even if you have a beard, you have to shave. Unless you want to have a beard that goes all the way down to your navel. Harry's has a great deal for holiday shopping for anybody. A thoughtful gift that's useful and practical and affordable. Like this, the Winter Winston. This is beautiful. It's a limited edition. They did this last year with Winter Winston, was a copper handle. Now they've got a midnight blue chrome razor handle. You can get it engraved with initials. It makes it extra special. And, of course, as with all of Harry's shaving kits, you get three of their German-engineered five-blade cartridges that give you a beautiful, close, comfortable shave. Foaming shave gel that smells amazing. The beautifully designed gift box. Now, it is normally $30 on harrys.com, but we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off on your order. Just use the offer code TWIT5, and you're going to get $5 off. And this is a really nice gift. And if you really want a gift that keeps on giving, get a subscription for the blades and the shave gel or the shave cream. And you're going to make somebody very happy. Harry's blades are better than the drugstore blades at half the cost because they bought the factory in Germany. And I have to admit, I was growing that beard, I kind of missed my Harry's. It was like a reunion with a loved one. I shaved off that beard and I got back with Harry's. Go to harrys.com right now to get $5 off a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. And don't forget to enter the code TWIT5 at checkout. Free shipping ends December 9th. So if you want to get it for the holidays, do not delay. Harry's.com. Don't forget the offer code TWIT number 5. That's for $5 off. Baratunde, since you're about to take off, was there any story that you wanted to talk about that we haven't talked about yet?
No. I mean, I threw in a bunch of links about the fake news stuff and the Facebook and the election thing. So I feel like we actually dealt with that a bit.
I hate to see Facebook, the responsibility laid all at Facebook's feet. Fake news is everywhere. We've talked about this before. You listened to the show last week. It was one of the topics.
I used to work for the world's premier fake news outlet.
Yeah. Sometimes fake news has a value.
Less evil than the new breed.
Yeah. And you know, but people share fake news because it says more than this is the story that you should read. It's especially this kind of fake news. It's visceral. It's about my beliefs. I think the way to get rid of fake news is to give people information Jeff Jarvis had a great Medium post in which he proposed exactly that, not censoring Facebook, but getting tools on Facebook for make it easier for people to report something that's blatantly false, to have Facebook maybe add additional links. He did this with John Borthwick of BuzzFeed to sites like Snopes.
John Borthwick of BetaWorks.
I'm sorry, BetaWorks, not BuzzFeed. You're right. Thank you.
I'm here to do real-time fact-checking.
You see what a dope I am? Do. Yeah. It's not just Facebook. It's everywhere. This is kind of the nature of the beast now, is that there's a lot of information flowing all over us. And to some extent, it's our responsibility, too, to teach our up-and-coming young people how to decide what's real and not.
I mean, I think what we've done, and I can't take full credit for some of this language, but I agree with it fully, and I'm the one saying it now, so you can say you heard it from me, but I didn't create it. We have torn down a lot. Like, the internet has destroyed so much of how we knew the world to work. It destroyed some real heinous things, like the music industry, which, you know, we're not operating in the best interest of many. Though a lot of good people have lost in the way the new system is starting to emerge. It's destroyed. Most incumbent institutions will not either survive or look at all like the way they have in how they achieve their power. And media as a structure, not just the media business, not just the news in particular, but all kinds of content, totally different. And we've torn down the way it used to be done, and we haven't fully established what it's going to be. And so we've mostly broken the world.
Right. And that's true in every, as you say, in every industry.
Every industry. Education, in banking, in politics. Like, you just see everything will fall. And that sounds like ominous. But I think it's just a fact. And we haven't rebuilt, much less, we haven't even redesigned, much less rebuilt what we wanted to look like. Yeah. And so we developed norms in the old media system, as lazy as it could be, as corrupt as it could be. It had norms. It had expectations. You had some understanding, some semblance of what fairness was. This new system ripped all that to shreds. Yes. And so when it's profitable, when it's extremely profitable to traffic in absolute lies, and there's no check on that. Like, that's a feature, like, because we're in the in-between, right? We're in the upside down of the real world right now. We haven't been able to come back through. I'm throwing a lot of metaphors out there. I think people are keeping up. So I get a little bit distraught and depressed and upset, but then it helps for me to remember that it's actually a great opportunity for us in all this chaos, because this is just officially the chaos era, to define what some of that new order might look like. And can it distribute power more fairly than the last system? We all have superpowers in the palm of our hands now. That's pretty cool. That wasn't the case before. But we're also super vulnerable in ways that we weren't before, because we didn't get our news from our uncles and our grandparents and our nephews and our cousins. We got it from people who had some sense of training. And narrow and undiverse as they were, they had some basic shared set of rules that have been thrown out the window, and we haven't rewritten new ones. So I think that's, to me, that's part of the bigger issue, is that we just haven't redefined and redesigned the world as we'd like to live in it yet. And we're suffering through the chaos and just being mad at being stuck in between both.
I think that's very insightful and exactly the right long view on this. We live, you know, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. This is the disruption that we knew would happen.
In fact, this
is where I feel bad. I wanted it to happen because I looked at the internet and thought, this is the ultimate democratizing force. Everybody gets a voice.
And you realize democracy sucks.
Yeah. I didn't anticipate, and I don't think any of us anticipated, some of the downsides of everybody having a voice. But that's fine, because we will reinvent this. And we just have to do it. We just have to all be human and be respectful and loving of one another and do the best we can to remake the world in a way that works for everybody. I think it's possible.
So,
It might be that something years on this earth that I've been a black man, but the world has not always been a great place in general. The world has never gone. I mean, unless we get to Star Trek time, there are good people, there are bad people. And that's kind of where the cookie crumbles. You gave everybody a voice. Of course, a third or a half or a quarter of those voices are going to be terrible voices. Right. And they have the right to have their voice and conglomerate and pontificate with themselves. It's just when they spill off and attack others with their rhetoric, that's a problem. But, I mean, you are a butterfly, unicorn, happy man. Because you be out here thinking about the world.
I believe.
Yeah, you do believe. I don't believe.
No, Owen, you're right. And I've read a lot of history. But I have to say, the history of the world was worse. We have improved. We had a very bloody century in the 20th century. That wasn't good. A lot of bad things happened. But I think we came out of it into the 21st century. And overall, we're far from perfect. Far from
it. 21st century, we just had, if we want to get to the, I'm going to just cut this short. Yes, we're doing better. The one thing I am very happy and thankful for about a Trump victory is that a lot of people that were doing misdeeds and positions of power were doing things to people without making their voice heard. Now we have mayors talking about the first lady being a monkey.
Oh,
we have police officers on their Facebook talking about people in their district and their community, and they get fired. So I thank Donald Trump so much for cutting the grass so we can see the snakes and we can get rid of the snakes that are stupid enough to put their voice out there for the public. That's the best thing about what's going on right now. You want to try and destroy somebody else's livelihood and make someone downtrodden? Go ahead and do it now, because now we got your picture, we got your face, we got your name. You're going to lose your job and be sitting at home and have something really important to cry about. That's the only thing that's going on good right now with people acting crazy.
Yeah, I think there are lots of bad things going on, but I think unbalanced technology moves us forward and has made us made progress. There are negatives. There are backwards steps.
This was a kind of a backward step.
I'm not even just this disruption that you were talking about, Baratunde. But I think on balance, it is forward progress. I really do. Maybe I'm foolish.
I think you're absolutely right. We are in the safest part of the world, time of the world that we have ever lived in. If we talk about even all the world, this is the safest that we've ever been. But the problem is with us. Like, the only thing that can really fight this, it's not Facebook. It's not the problem with fake news. It's education. If we need to have education, and it needs to be free, and it needs to be for everyone, that is the only way that we will really battle this. Because unfortunately, if you do not have the education to understand the economics of what we are dealing with in what would be fake news, we are made, if we see something enough, we believe it. Whether it be true or not, your parents tell you that you are stupid. You might be the most brilliant person on this planet,
but you believe it.
You hear it. Enough, you will start to believe it. It's the way we're made to be mimics. And that's one of the things that allowed us to survive. But it's also a really big issue, because if we don't have any other facts to be able to refute that, we're going to be falling into cognitive bias and then cognitive dissonance, which means that we have a certain belief system. We actually don't like to hear any other views that are opposed to whatever we already believe. And that becomes an issue that we don't want the truth. We want things that say that whatever I believe already is true, because that makes us feel comfortable. We end up feeling anxiety and disdain when other opposing views are going to conflict with us. And that's very distressing for our system. So we need to be able to get out there. We need to talk about it. But in the end, we need to give education to everyone. And it's something that everyone should fight behind. And I think that everyone can stand behind that. It's so very important.
Love it. We have to send Baratunde to the Batmobile. But
thank you.
Baratunde, I want to leave you on an upbeat note. Good news. Metallica's full catalog is now available on Napster. I just wanted you to know.
I have been waiting a long time.
I know you have. I know you
have. That. And sorry for dropping that word. You can bleep it out. But good for them. It's better late than never. Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I went to church today with Georgia. Dr. Georgia just took us to church. Doctor.
Doctor and doctor. She's a real doctor. He just plays one on the radio.
I'm a real doctor.
I'm a member of the choir in the church twit for this Sunday. Thanks for having me back. I've missed
love
the chat
you,
room. Hello, chatters and
great
listeners. And you can find me on Baratunde.com. I'm doing the Nat Geo thing. Very excited about it. And I'll be doing a Facebook live chat noon Eastern on my page about that Nat Geo episode to talk about policing, criminal justice, and other hilarious topics with and serious issues facing our society. So thanks, everybody.
Care. See you, Bear.
Later, Bear Tunde.
Thanks.
See you to the Bat Cave. All right. We will reset the set. While we're doing that, let's take a look at some of the things you might have missed this week on Twit.
Obviously on Twit.
I think the sound is pretty good. Let me... Macrocise.
Twit Live Specials.
We've seen a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle that you can actually buy today. We've seen an autonomous vehicle that drives better than I do. We've seen every automaker in this hall adapt and adopt to a world that is far more connected, far more intelligent, and far more Silicon Valley than it is Detroit. That's why Twit TV has come here to Los Angeles for the LA Auto Show Automobility 2016.
Windows Weekly.
We're going to try to demonstrate HoloLens over Skype. We're talking about HoloLens applications in real world use cases. Like these are actual
facts. Schiphol Airport here is the major hub. Airport, and we see live data of all the aircraft.
This is the future of UI. You totally can see that. Yeah. Do you see maybe air traffic controllers maybe even using something
like
this? I'd
love to talk to these guys.
Twit. Twit with your head, not over it.
All right, guys. Here's how I listen to Tech News Today. See if you can follow.
Hey, Alexa. What's your latest flash brief?
Here's your flash briefing from this week in tech. I'm Megan Moroney.
I'm Jason Howell from Tech News Today.
By the way, we are on, if you have an Amazon Echo, we are a part of the flash briefing. It might not be immediately apparent, but if you go to your app and you go to the flash briefing settings, search for Twit, you can get a daily dose of tech news from Megan and Jason and this show and new screensavers on your Amazon Echo. Megan Moroney's here with a look at what's ahead this week on Twit. Megan?
Thanks, Leo. Here's a look at just a few of the stories that we'll be watching in the week ahead. Now, this week is a short one since it's Thanksgiving here in the United States. So the studio will be dark on Thursday and Friday. So we can all spend some time thinking about what we're grateful for. And speaking of Thanksgiving, the first episode of the 9-part football VR series is set to launch on YouTube and the Google Daydream headset this week on Thanksgiving Day. So gather your family and all your VR goggles to watch, because nothing spells togetherness more than a family in their own virtual worlds. But before that, Tuesday is the official launch of the OnePlus 3T. The phone starts at $439. It has a faster processor, bigger battery, and there's a new 128 gigabyte version. This Wednesday is Fibonacci Day. That's 1123 or 1123, which starts the Fibonacci sequence, where each number in the series is the sum of the two numbers behind it. And I must say, Fibonacci is my favorite sequence. Wednesday is also the deadline for trading in your old MacBook to Microsoft for 650 big ones off a new service book. That's $650. Does that convince you to be a switcher? And yes, of course, this week is Black Friday, where you can do all your shopping with some crazy online sales. But some of you might also choose to celebrate it as Buy Nothing Day. And I personally think we should all celebrate it as Update Your Parents' Browser Day. It doesn't have to be your parents either. If you're spending this holiday with any family less technical than you are, remind them to update everything, especially all of their passwords. And while you're at it, why not encourage them to turn on some two-factor authentication? We'll be covering these stories and a whole lot more this week on Tech News Today with Jason Howell. It's every day at 4 p.m. Pacific, right here on this channel you're watching. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Megan. Megan Moroney. She joins us every Monday through Friday. Yeah,
isn't she great? Might have to get that OnePlus phone.
Yeah, the 3T looks really nice. Yeah.
That's what Leah uses. She has, I forget which one she has. She has the
OnePlus 2 or 1. There's, or the,
yeah,
three.
2.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the I like the 3 a lot. Fibonacci Day, you going to celebrate?
There's a restaurant in Montreal that's called Fibonacci, but the food's horrible. So We're not celebrating. They're good at math, just not.
It's a nice sequence anyway. Hey, you know what's good at Wi-Fi? This little thing. Have you ever seen this? This is the Eero, E-E-R-O, our show today brought to you by Eero. And I have to say, when I'm at home, I have two networks so I can test stuff. I have a Comcast Business and a Comcast Consumer, and I have two different router systems. And every time I get home, every device in my pocket, every laptop, they all switch over to the Eero. They go, oh, this is good. I like this. I can't get them to use that other system. That's because Eero really works. It is a better Wi-Fi. Of course, it does all the things right that, you know, we talk about, WPA2 encryption built in. You don't have to hide it. It looks great in your house. The phone support is good. In fact, I tested them. I wasn't just testing them. I couldn't figure out what was going on with my port forwarding, and they really did a great job. They stuck with me till we figured it out and they solved it. They're good. The way you set up the Eero is also cool. Now, you can buy an individual Eero, but most of the time you're going to get three of them, the three-pack. And then you set up the first one. You connect that to your cable modem or router. And then use the app to place the other two to spread using a mesh network throughout your house. If you have other Ethernet drops, you can actually connect the other Eeros to Ethernet as well. It's smart enough to know exactly what to do. It's not just repeaters. This is a mesh network. In fact, they just introduced something they're calling TrueMesh, an even better wireless mesh technology, which makes the Eero network work even better within the house. No matter how far away you are from the base unit, you're going to have the fastest networking possible. Eero users will see, if you already have an Eero, you get updated automatically, up to 2 times the LAN speed between Eeros. That means if you're in your network, you're going to get HD 4K quality in many cases, depending, of course, on your internet service provider. But that's going to be the bottleneck on your network. I really love these Eero systems. What is so important with any network router, and it's unfortunately not true of most, this has got to be updatable. And Eero updates on average about every week. In fact, you're going to automatically get the new Eero software and TrueMesh because it just updates all the time. It's always looking at your network. It's always optimizing for what you have, the devices. It has some really nice features. For instance, I can assign all the devices in the house to our teenager that he uses. And then I can go to the Amazon Echo and say, pause Michael's internet. Oh, and I love the howl. Hey, the internet's down. Yes, it is, Michael. Yes, it is. That is so awesome. And you can even use this because Eero, because it has the mesh network and it kind of can triangulate where your devices are, you can say, hey, Eero, where's my phone? And it will give you you can do this on the Alexa or the Echo. I don't want to say the A word. You can do this on the Amazon Echo. You can ask the Echo to find your phone or any device that's on Wi-Fi in your house. You can have it turn off your Eero LED if it's nighttime and you don't want any blinking in your bedroom. Plus, like I said, you can pause. This is the greatest stuff ever.
Every family should have that.
Yes. Echo, pause Michael's internet. It's awesome. His iPad, his phone, his computer, they all go offline. Bedtime. I love it. If you go to eero.com, you can learn more. No more buffering, no more dead zones. Super simple to set up. Anybody can set this up. This is a good gift for somebody in your family who's not technically savvy, but is having trouble with Wi-Fi. It really works. Free overnight shipping if you go to eero.com and use the offer code TWIT. eero.com. I was really skeptical when I first got the Eero. And I have to say, now I'm stuck. In fact, I can't not use the Eero. I love it. I want to test other networks, you know, but I just can't. Sorry. Even my devices know it's better on Eero. Eero.com. Use the offer code TWIT. We should really do something cheerful now after this grim 2 hours talking about how awful everything is. Things are okay, right?
The world is a great place. I'm here with Georgia. You're here. That's okay, too. I mean, the world is
an amazing
place.
I'm okay, too.
Look, I made you laugh.
Yeah, you did.
I made Georgia laugh. Georgia laughs at everything.
She laughed more. Georgia laughed more.
She did. She laughed a little too hard, personally. I would take a little offense to that. You play this back later, you might feel some sort of way.
I'm not going to mention the woman who is... facing prosecution, even jail time, for selling $12 of ceviche on Facebook.
I thought you said you were going to make us feel better.
I know. That's depressing, isn't it?
That's only happy for people that hate ceviche.
This is so... She doesn't do it for money. She says, sometimes I make too much food, and so I go to the... You know, Facebook now has that little neighborhood selling thing, and I say, anybody want any ceviche? So they did a sting. The city of Stockton, California did a sting. They sent an inspector over. He bought her ceviche, and then they arrested her.
That's so ridiculous.
If he wanted the ceviche, he wouldn't have arrested her. That's what we know.
And by the way, Stockton is a very dangerous city. A lot of gun violence.
I was going to say, don't they have other things to do?
Don't you have something better to do than chase down a mom who's selling ceviche on Facebook?
I mean, I should warn people because there are people selling food on my Facebook thing, too. I see that actually a lot.
It's technically illegal, although there is a – because there's lots of groups that have, you know, crab feeds or spaghetti feeds and stuff. So there actually is a federal law, I think, that allows unlicensed food sales in certain circumstances.
I've seen people get arrested for giving homeless people food, just giving them food.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know.
Oh, so no. Yeah. We had my daughter had a friend, high schooler, had a group that would feed people who were homeless in Petaluma. They got shut down.
That's ridiculous.
Like, I understand we got to
put some kind of common sense will come common into play sense. With
I understand we have to protect people. It's not a federal law. I'm sorry. It's a state law. The California cottage food law, which says some approved baked products, including breads, cookies, pastas, confections, can be sold locally with a short training. Home cooks are allowed to sell. However, ceviche is not covered because it's made of raw fish. It's a delicious raw fish cocktail that's cured with, you know, vinegar and spices.
What's up, though, with the locking people up for things that really are non-threatening crimes?
Find something else to do.
We have much better things that we can do if people kind of, you know, break a law that's not actually violent. You're not making the world any safer by, you know, having one woman that, you know, if she knew she wasn't supposed to do it, I'm sure she would have said,
okay. They didn't warn her, right? They didn't warn her. They just stung her.
And that's why we jail more people than anybody else in the world.
You give her a ticket. You give her a ticket and you say, don't do that again. And she does it again. You give her another ticket. She does it a third time. Okay, then maybe.
You find her. People, give her a ticket. The thing that people care about most is their pocketbook. Give them a fine or make them, you know, do some community service. And then that's it. Done. I don't know. I don't understand. I think that most people that are, we won't get into a prison debate. But anyways, I'll stop.
I'm trying to find good news. I just can't find any good news in here. Come on. There's got to be some good news. I don't feel depressed. I feel good about, technology. I think, you know, we're working on it. Everything's perfect.
There's that little Toyota robot that's adorable and wants to be loved. That's happy. No,
yeah,
bad.
Cute robot.
Robot
okay.
Overlords. That could that end poorly.
You know, so like, okay, here's some happy news. Sal Segoyan got fired at Apple. So there's happy news. I love Sal. Sal is the guy who was the Apple script guy. We've had him on many, many times. We did a whole series of podcasts with him on Mac Break. He was responsible for Automator for Apple Script. He was Apple's product manager of automation technologies. His post was eliminated. And so he's going to consult and stuff like that. Love you, Sal. I'm sorry to hear that. I kind of saw the writing on the wall. This is another example of Apple just kind of abandoning a certain category of user that wants to do more than just kind of browse and have a lovely computer.
Did we talk about the FCC caving on Republican demands?
Yeah, the FCC says, all right, we're not going to do anything until after the inauguration day.
That's stuff that people don't think about. Like when I tell people it's going to be okay, it's not a big deal. Stuff like that is kind of a big deal.
I think this is unprecedented, though. Doesn't this happen every 4 years where you have a lame duck president, they just kind of say, okay, we're not going to do much for the next couple of months. We're just going to let the new guy.
They do that, but I mean for us, especially in the bubble, some of the things that he was trying to finish up and get through
FCC,
that he had worked on for years.
I agree.
Like, they stalled it out and stalled it out and stalled it out, and then finally, yeah, we'll do it next week. And now they just put this rule in where they're like, no. And I'm like, my goodness, like he was trying to do some really good stuff that I don't think is going to get pushed forward. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Tom Wheeler, who was the chairman of the FCC, a Republican, might point out. Obama appointee, but a Republican. And in fact, we thought he was going to be terrible. John Oliver said it was like letting your having a dingo babysit your baby. But he called him a dingo. But then he had to take it back because Tom Wheeler, even though he had been a lobbyist for the cable industry and the telcos, turned out to be our best friend.
Because he knew the inside trade of it. So that's why I said give some people a chance. Give them enough rope to hang themselves and maybe they'll swing across and make the gap. I don't know.
Yep.
But that's kind of crappy for us.
I just can't. Come on. Something good. Happy story. Happy. Happy, happy. Happy,
we already happy, talked Georgia. About the happy stuff.
Ah, screw it.
Didn't we already do the happy stuff?
You know, I hate to leave people with it. The one happy story was that Metallica is now on Napster. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, somebody in the chat and people tweeted me that we were too nice about Apple, and I thought we yelled at Apple.
I don't think we're that nice. I want to start a campaign, though, that to everybody stop buying stuff that doesn't have a replaceable battery. It's good for
then
you.
No,
that's good for
the environment. No, that's never. Yeah, you could try that. That's never happening.
Yeah. Well, Samsung does it, but their phones started blowing up.
Technology. Yeah. You're the right, but I think that people love their technology and how light it is. And when they're carrying around a heavy laptop, they're going to be like, you know what? It's big and cumbersome. Unfortunately, you know, we're used to it now. We've already drank the Kool-Aid. Now we want light and portable, and it's hard to go back afterwards, even if it's better for us. We need to find it to be able to light and portable and be able to be recyclable. That's what we need to do.
So, I know. Tesla. Here's happy news. If you're a fan of Top Gear.
Oh, that's true.
The Grand Tour.
Did you watch it?
I didn't. I haven't. I'm saving it. Jeremy Clarkson, who of course was fired after punching at a producer on Top Gear. Richard Hammond and James May are back. And they've created a show not just about cars, but about, it says, adventure, excitement, friendship. And it is a Amazon original free on Prime. I don't want to violate copyright. Yeah, good, I can't. They're stopping me because of a digital rights error. But you got to watch the beginning. The beginning segment, 5 minutes, involves Clarkson getting on a plane from England, flying to the United States, renting a Mustang, and then his two buddies show up. He has a red Mustang, and then they show up in a blue and white Mustang, and they're three red, white, and blue Mustangs. Basically go somewhere that looks like Burning Man in the California desert, and they've got this big thing. This five-minute beginning sequence cost Amazon $3 million, and it was worth every penny.
Wow.
I saw it. It was pretty good. It needs to be a little bit tightened up for other people that have seen it. There's a scene in the middle. Everyone will know what it is that went on for too long. And it was like, why are you doing this? Oh. There's a scene in the middle where everyone's like, you know, my little 8-year-old went, why do they keep doing this? That's not funny.
Stop it.
So that piece are there. But the camera shots are glorious. And it still has that Top Gear atmosphere and the camaraderie between them. That's just so great. So I think people are going to be really happy with it. But I hope they don't do the middle scene. You know it with the plane. I'm just going to say that.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to watch it. But,
just saying.
Oh, man. Well, you know, it's always been a little over the top, right? It's kind of fun. Fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we love it.
Jeremy Clarkson is back, baby. So there you go. That's happy.
Twitter suspended a whole bunch of alt-right things. That was happy. That was good.
Yeah. I don't know what to think about that, only because...
Are you free speech?
No. And alt-right's disgusting. In fact, I don't even want to use the word alt-right. Let's just call them what they are, white supremacists.
Yeah.
We have laws in Canada against hate speech.
Yeah.
For anyone. Against anyone.
Do we have laws in the U.S. against hate speech? I feel like we might not.
We do, like, technically speaking, when someone does something that's over the realm of free speech, when they're threatening or disparaging in a certain way.
If you threaten bodily harm.
Yeah, there's a system set in place where there's certain triggers where it comes into not being free speech anymore.
Right.
So we do have them. But again, it's like a catch 22 of people that are really smart dance that line like nobody's business.
Yeah.
To play that
game.
That's
why I feel like, yeah, I'm glad that they kicked these guys off. It's not going to hurt them. In fact, it gives them notoriety, as it did with Milo Yiannopoulos. But there's so many other hateful things on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It's a drop in the bucket, I guess.
At least they're doing something, because for a long time they weren't doing enough for anything.
Yeah.
And so at least they're making efforts.
Yeah. In fact, they have a new tool, that Moot Tools, and they're saying it's easier to report people and stuff like that. We need Twitter. In fact, a good article from Ben Thompson, who has been on this show many times and writes great stuff, why we've got to save Twitter. And it may not, maybe the best way to save Twitter is not to let it continue as a private company run by these guys who don't really seem to be doing a good job as stewards of Twitter. But maybe there's some way, he says, why Twitter must be saved. And let me see if I can find the money quote here.
I didn't read that, but I believe that with all my heart.
Yeah.
People that complain about Twitter or think Twitter's not useful, when Twitter's gone, you will feel it. Like, you will feel it. It is the communication of the world in speed and time. And there are certain times, maybe their numbers aren't as big, and maybe they're not growing the way they're supposed to grow, but it is a necessity and a way of life, especially for people in unserved markets and areas. Like, I don't know what we would do without Twitter. I really don't.
Well, and the fake news problem is less of a problem on Twitter, not because there's lots of fake news on Twitter, but people respond immediately. So yes, there is this kind of, because it's kind of a live feed, this natural tendency to move towards correct information. But he quotes in this Justice Louis Brandeis from the Supreme Court, "The greatest menace to freedom is an inert people. Political discussion is a political duty, and that this should be fundamental principle of American government." And that's where, according to Ben, and I agree, the discussion is happening these days, and we need to have that conversation. So maybe
you know what the problem though, Leo, is with most social media is that it's not actually a discussion among people that have differing views. You follow people that follow similar views to you. We're usually inclined to like people better that have similar views to us. We don't really want discourse with people of opposing views. And Twitter is a huge microcosm of that, that most of the people that, you know, you send something out that's slightly political, you'll notice your follower levels of people that believe different things will actually drop off because they don't want to hear that. And so it's not really dealing with discourse. It's a whole bunch of people banding together that are in the same in-group. And so we need to have more discourse of people with differing views. And we need to learn that people that think different things than you are okay. It's okay to believe different things. That's how we grow. We need to have, you know, differing parties or political stances to battle each other, to keep each other in check. And that's where the strength in a democracy really lies. And we're starting to become more of in-group people. And so discussions on Twitter are usually with your own people, and you're not really bringing out the news of a differing view to many people.
Yeah.
In a positive light, there are, yes, echo chambers all around, all over the internet. But there have been many a time where someone has said something to me, and 140 characters, I flipped their whole mindset around because I actually took the time and said something to them directly. So, yes, it does happen occasionally. It needs to happen more. But I'm very happy with the fact that a lot of times people say something to me, "Why would you say that?" And I say, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, and they're like, I never thought of it that way. And it does happen. We need to have more of that happen with more people.
Yeah.
But I love getting out of my echo chamber. I want to be in everybody's chamber.
But that's up to you. And I think that that's the point, is that Twitter gives you the option, if you want, to hear from other people, to see other views. And everybody should take that opportunity to broaden your Twitter feed, to find, you know, find people with opposing viewpoints, not even necessarily to engage them, just to see what the conversation is. And so that's, to me, that's the real point. Yes, you're right. You could be in a filter bubble, but Twitter and the internet give you the tools to expand beyond that in a way we've never had before, to hear as many voices as you're willing to hear. And that's the opportunity. And I think we need to take advantage of that opportunity. And that's why
we is great. Yeah. But unfortunately, I think that one piece to Twitter, and I like Twitter. I use Twitter. It's one of the few social sets of social media that I actually use. So I do like Twitter. But the problem is that Twitter, like, you end up getting the people that speak the loudest and are the most polarizing, get the most followers from that and get retweeted more often. And if you actually want to change people's views, you need a moderate discussion. Like what Owen, you said, is that you spoke to someone directly. You came from the place where they were at, and you were able to make them think, you know what, maybe I was wrong about what I was dealing with. If you have someone that has a vastly opposing view, it doesn't actually help you change your mind. It actually usually reinforces your own belief of why that person is wrong. And so we need to have also moderate discourse instead of having really angry, reactive reactions, and Twitter and much of social media reinforces and rewards people that are highly reactive and really angry. Yeah, and that can actually cause people to be polarized against it. So I think that we need to, you know, have moderate discussions about things of, you know, we're not so far apart as we think that we are.
Yeah.
I was just about to fake argue with you about that, but I love you so much I can't even do it. So.
No fake
argument. I had it all set up in my mind. You don't know what you're talking about. Blah, 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 blah. And then I couldn't do it.
Sorry. Consider
that would have been hilarious, though.
I tried. I really tried in my mind. I was like,
you should have done it. You should have done it. That would have been great.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the concluding moments of this fine program. Thanks once again to Baratunde Thurston for joining us. To Georgia Dow. Of iMore.com. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. You're the voice of reason, and I like that. And, of course, you can find her videos about anxiety and depression and sleep at anxiety-videos.com. I want to give you a big plug for that because that's a great work you're up to there. Thank you for being here. Also, thank you to Owen J.J. Stone. We call him O-Doctor for reasons no one knows, but maybe that's because it's his Twitter handle. I don't know.
It might be my Twitter handle. If you listen to this and you haven't had enough of politics and me talk about it, I did a podcast on Facebook Politics where I ramble and rant about stuff. And then, like I said earlier, I did a podcast with a French guy, a German guy, a guy from South Africa.
What was that show? I want to hear that.
The French Spin. It's on IQMZ in my Facebook Politics post. I link to it so you can get to it. But they talk about somebody changing your mind.
This is Patrick Béja's show. I know this show.
Yes.
Patrick's been on many times.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
And again, talk about out of my ecosystem. They were talking about how America helps the world and what they're supposed to do. And I'm in the mentality of I'm tired of being everybody's big brother. I'm tired of super duper socialism where we just give away all this money. We got poor people in America. And in their mind, all over the country, all over the world, they were like, look, bro, we need you. Like, we need that stuff that y'all are doing for us. And they gave very rational points to it where it changed my mind. Like, I guess we can't stop being the world's big brother because we have a responsibility that I wish that we didn't have, but we do. So it's always great to get outside of yourself and listen to other people. That's why I come on the show and learn something from Uncle Leo occasionally, teach him stuff. And, of course, anytime they tell me George is on, I got to be here because I can't leave her alone.
The Phileas Club is the podcast. It's episode 78, FrenchSpin.com, Patrick Béja's excellent podcast. That would be well worth listening to. I will make a point of it on the way home. Thank you all for joining us. Wow. I was a little worried about this show. It ended up being really, really good.
Was it because of me that you were worried?
No. You were the only person I wasn't worried about.
What? Oh, what? Really? Really?
Actually, I wasn't worried about you either. In fact, there really was no reason to worry at all.
There's no reason to worry at all.
No reason to worry at all.
We got Captain Baratunde. We got Georgia. I know everything because I'm a real Dr. Dow.
I'm not really a real doctor.
I know. I'm just saying that because everybody else says that when you're with me. You get to be the real doctor, and I'm a fake doctor. I'm just as real as you, okay? Just so everybody knows.
You are just
knows.
As real. Can pinch, just as real. Pinch Owen, and he yells.
Guess what? Leo, I got one thing to say that most people don't usually get to say. You know what it is?
What?
Another twit is in the can.
Amazing. And on that note,